Blog Talk Radio.
Conspiracies and crime bosses are only as powerful as their weakest link.
as their weakest link. So now, you remember the scene in The Godfather where concierge, as they say, went to the prison and said, "Look, I want to talk to you. You know how it is. It used to be in Rome, the Romans. You say, you believe how the Romans did that? Oh yeah, I believe that." He says, "Well, you know, when things were going south, and they knew that the family was going to be taken care of, you know, they would do the right thing." He says, "I know what you mean. I know what you mean." He says, "But my family will be taken care of." So yes, your family will be taken care of.
The next day,
they found him with his wrist cut. I guess David Wofsy wasn't going that direction. Huh? The offer, he did refuse. who was the other one? The mayor of Jersey said, yeah. Not only even no, but hell no.
Well, was the Bush crony who committed suicide? Before he was going to prison. You remember that big scandal down in Texas? That energy company or whatever?
Yes.
And the day before, he goes away for life in prison.
Just happens.
He has a big party at the house. Massive heart attack, they said. And he passed away. So that then, even better, all the money he embezzled went to his family. And that the government said, we can't deny the criminal is dead.
But it's starting to hit the fan with Mr. Christie. I mean, because, you know, they were hoping that the Senate would have an investigation, the House would have an investigation, the federal government would have an investigation, and they would jump over each other and squabble over who's got who. And Fishman, who is the U.S. attorney now in Jersey, who took over from Christie, is not out wearing flashy suits, not out buying ties at Joseph A. Banks and having cameras there and going after every politician in the country. I mean, well, in the country, but in the state, definitely. Quiet guy, unassuming guy. You hear nothing out of the U.S. attorney.
Not
I. He got together with Shaw, who is the guy who put away the governor of Illinois, Bogdanovich. He put him away.
Yep.
And Tony Russo, big Democratic Party boss.
Yep.
He put them away. One got 14, one got 10. He is the one that the House got to now.
Because he's serious.
He's a serious man. He will set
Which
down
the
federal prosecutor.
Which is also the same reason why there's nothing, there's no chitter chat.
That's,
you know, there's not little leaks coming out here and there. None of that.
So
this guy is a professional.
Who was the professional? He was the special prosecutor to get him. And then he got together with the New Jersey special prosecutor and said, "Look, you guys handle the federal and will handle all the stuff on the other side." And they said, "Hey, amen to that." So the House and the Senate got together. They have one committee now, that too. Shaw is the head of that committee. And they're going to find out, because David Wildstein has already started yapping. But the federal prosecutor that everybody thought was going to go after that and step on the House and the Assembly is not doing it. He's going after that fat Pillsbury Doughboy for violation of federal statutes of misusing funds that were given for the federal government for the storm, the Sandy storm. He's in deep boo-boo. They already know he gave $6 million to some podunk town to have that Democratic mayor vote for him to build a building that had 10% of the apartments were people for Sandy Lee. But the rest were all $3,000,
$4,000
a month. Yeah. And they did not have one building damaged. And I forget the, listen, it's in our paperwork here, I forget the place where it was, but they only had lines down.
Right.
So this man is going to be, he can't say David Wallstein did that. He can't say Kelly did that.
Right. Yeah, you notice he's got an excuse everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
What I love about these snakes is that they, as soon as anything bad happens, they just throw everybody. I mean, he's thrown all of his staff and thrown all of his everybody to the
give
to
all
the
your, and you know, saying of today, give all your associates jobs and six figure salaries. But when things go south, throw them under the bus.
Yep. Sounds like it's time for, I don't know, little Charles Bronson, little Jan Michael Vincent.
Right.
Got to call a mechanic to fix this kind of problem.
Absolutely. Well, we have a call right now, and I'd like to see who this call is from. Hello, who's this? Hello? Hello? Anybody there? Okay. Nobody there.
Just listen.
Just listen. Okay, just listen.
And by the way.
By the way.
You're listening too.
You're listening
to the last
to
word.
The last word, which I didn't say.
That's correct.
The last word with Thomas Fortenberry, senior producer Michael Larson as the host. And this is Blog Talk Radio.
This will be the 7th of February as we continue to eat time this year. This, done this year.
Yeah. Why did I put down the 1st of February on that thing? I'm losing my
mind. It was when you typed it up, so it's okay.
That might be when I typed it up. Now, there needs to be,
we have a busy time.
Oh, busy time. As
we've got too much stuff. I've got pages of stuff here.
I'm going to hear what and see. You know, we also have the Olympics.
Oh, yeah. Tonight, the official beginning of the Olympics. Now, we started watching some of the skating and the snowboarding and the, wipeouts that they had last night. That was kind of interesting, but my kids like to watch.
Well, his Letterman had a couple of things to say about that.
Tonight, the Olympics might begin from Russia, from Sochi. I'm very excited about this. I'm trembling with anticipation and a lot of pregame grumbling. A lot of people who go over there, athletes and everybody, they're saying, well, the hotels stink here in Sochi. And I'm stunned to hear that. Mm. You know, the problem is there's only three hotels in Sochi. Of course, you have the Ritz Chernobyl. You have the Sheraton Gulag. And really, the best one over there, you have the Two Seasons. The Two Seasons.
He also had this to say. Hold on.
Tonight, the Olympics begin from Russia, from Sochi. I'm very excited about this. I'm trembling with anticipation. A lot of pregame grumbling. A lot of people who go over there, athletes and everybody, they're saying, well, the hotels stink here in Sochi. And I was stunned to hear that. Mm. You know, the problem is there's only three hotels in Sochi. Of course, you have the Ritz Chernobyl. You have the Sheraton Gulag. And really, the best one over there, you have the Two Seasons.
The Two Seasons.
Sochi, when they tell you your room is not your ready, what they really mean is it hasn't been built yet. Hello. Turn down service. Always answer. Whatever you want, hotel, they'll turn you down.
Oh, that's turn down service.
Yeah, well, Sochi is a major nothing. It was nothing there. It's just on the Black Sea.
It's just a little resort town, and they decided to,
little resort town with one hotel,
but
where you have to bring your own toilet paper.
Yeah, and this is something that let's be fair for a minute here. They are not that Russia's third world, but these countries are less advanced in their infrastructure, and they don't have all the every 5 feet of McDonald's and all the
signs
that we do here. So it's easier for someone like us, or just a major city like a Paris or some, to host something, than a small town that's got to literally bootstrap itself into world status overnight. And that's kind of a little bit much to expect from anybody.
Well,
but
We'll talk about the rest of North Carolina in a minute. But we have with us right now a gentleman, David Adams. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, David. Mr. Lawson. How are you?
How are you? Now, I'm turning everything around here because this was so outrageous. I did not know anything about it. I was talking about it before we went on the air. And ladies and gentlemen, you're listening out there, this is about a happening that happened about a year ago, about a young man who is serving a year now, I believe that's what it is, in prison and cannot get out on bail for some reason. Can you fill us in, David, of what actually happened with this young man?
Yes, Shannon Namodi. Has been held in the Franklin County Jail for over 16 months now. Back on August 16th of 2012, Shannon was outside of a friend's home in Youngsville, North Carolina. He had just came from a music gig, and he fell asleep in a truck, and he was awakened to gunshots. When he looked up, he saw a white female running a couple of houses away from where he was sleeping. And he went out to assist her. He saw a lady was bleeding about her head. And she said that someone had shot her in the face and that her daughter was involved. The young man stayed there with her. The house where he was at, the mother and the grandmother and this young man who lived there, his friend came out. They assisted the lady. She told the cops the same thing, that, someone had shot her and her daughter was involved. She had heard her daughter say, "The money's upstairs. Come on, hurry up, hurry up," after she had been shot. Subsequently, Shannon was charged with the crime the next day, okay? And he's been held in that facility, Franklin County Jail Detention Center, since that time. Now, the mother, despite the woman having said that Shannon wasn't her assailant, okay, the prosecutor in the case filed a motion in the court to have the case removed from the docket. Okay, that was back on February 20th of 2013. I've never heard of a case in this country where a criminal charge was taken off of a state or whether it's a district court, superior court docket, okay, with the defendant still held in custody. Okay, this is really a bizarre case. And we've been fighting unsuccessfully to try to get him out of jail. Now, he does have a $500,000 bail. But the family simply can't afford that. They've already put $50,000 into an attorney who has essentially done nothing for this young man. Okay? So, this is a crazy story. After a year or so, typically, if the state hasn't brought a defendant into court, that triggers the presumption that his 6th and 14th Amendments have been violated. Okay? And, the habeas been filed on his behalf to try to, challenge the state's lawful detention of him, okay? And the mother who presented the habeas has just been given a runaround, okay? This young man, his name is Shannon Namodi, okay? He's being held in a Franklin County jail. He's actually been held as a hostage because there are no pending charges against him anywhere in the state of North Carolina's court management docket system. So why is he being held in jail?
Well, I wanted to give you enough time to explain most of the case, and I think you've done it quite well. Question I have, this is a violation of habeas corpus, isn't it?
Yes,
and,
it is.
And,
yes, it is.
And why did the $500,000 bail, this was his first offense?
The kid has no criminal history at all. He had graduated from high school in May of 2012. He had already gotten a situation set up where he was going to go into the military. He was just waiting to go to the military. Okay, the kid has no criminal history whatsoever.
So what is the DA saying the charges are?
Well, the charges are larceny. Okay, larceny of a firearm and attempted murder. Now, the funny part about the first charge, larceny, they charged him with that, okay? But the gun that the charge was stealing a woman's .22 caliber rifle. But when they conducted a search warrant of the home later that day, late in the morning that day. The gun that he was accused of stealing was part of the inventory of the items that they confiscated from the home. So how are you going to charge the kid with that?
So I understand, and maybe because I read this in some report, that he called the 911 while he was trying to comfort the victim.
This is correct.
So question I have, why would someone call 911, be outside with
the victim, the murderer,
and then the DA charge him with attempted murder and theft?
Well, the story goes a little deeper than that, because there were a number of people out there that night, apparently in that community, there were two young men. I won't put their names on the radio. I will give them that courtesy. But there are two young men. These gentlemen are white. Okay, they're terrorizing the community. They've committed a number of violent crimes. A number of people have been shot. A number of robberies have occurred that these young men are involved in. And apparently everybody knows who they are. You know, everybody knows who they are. And these are the two guys that they're saying was responsible for shooting this woman in the face and stealing the $60,000 or how much money it was in her home. But the kicker is that they're saying that these guys are related to the sheriff of Franklin County, Sheriff Jerry Jones.
Okay.
Right.
Now, see,
is that the ones that they have the pictures online of them with the money?
That's correct. That's correct.
Okay.
Okay, now, I knew this, but I wanted you to explain it to our listening audience. Now, also something else that you – now I want to make sure I'm correct in this, that the daughter of this woman is going out with one of these people.
Yes, the young lady's daughter, who was 16 at the time, she should be gone on 18 now, maybe 17 and a half. She was apparently affiliated with these young men. Also, the night that they interviewed her, if you look at the police reports on my blog, you know, the interview with her, she said that, you know, the person that she saw leaving the home was a white male. Okay? Now, this young man, Sheldon Amodi, is a brown-skinned, dark-skinned brother who's indigenous, whose family's indigenous to Kenya, Africa. You know, he could never be mistaken as a white male. Okay, having, you know, been seen leaving that home, he could never be mistaken as a white male.
Well, I don't want to be funny or anything, but is he related to Obama? I mean, because I just heard something, I'm going to play a little bit later, a woman said Obama needs to be executed because he's a terrorist.
Yeah.
So, but
maybe this is preventing the next generation.
Preventing the next generation. But what I want to say is now, online, we see the guy with the money. Have the police or the DA looked at this?
No, they pretty much haven't even pursued that angle. Shannon was the only available person there. Number one, because he was a black man. Number two, everyone else, all the other youth that were there, their parents were there. So they didn't have anybody to advocate for him, you know, on his behalf. But, you know, the reality of this is that apparently there's been some type of conspiracy to put the charges on this young man because the sheriff or people who work in the law enforcement in that county, in the sheriff's office, apparently know what these two guys are running around doing, you know. They've been in trouble. The woman who got shot, everyone in her home, all her kids have criminal records. They've been involved in a criminal justice process in some fashion. Okay, so there was something really crazy going on, okay, in that home way before Shannon Amodi even came into the picture. Okay, and then he also, the story that they painted was that this girl had been soliciting someone to kill her mother. Okay, and according to a police CI witness, Captain Little, Lieutenant Little of the Youngsville Police Department, he filed an incident report stating that a witness told him that another young man, he said, she said stuff, that the young girl had been soliciting someone to kill her mother, and she got Shannon to do it, and she was paying her with sex, drugs, prescription drugs, and money. Okay, and that's the story that they got. But the thing is, they locked the kid up 12 hours after the actual crime occurred. okay? They didn't get that information, the information that they're charging him with. They didn't get that until nearly 32 hours later, the next day, when, according to the police's report, is when the CI gave them this information. But that information in that report is what they're saying occurred. That's the whole basis of their case.
Well, but again, why would someone call 911 and be out there with the victim when they come?
I mean, if you kill a person or try to, why would you stand beside them and help keep them alive?
I mean, I don't understand that.
No, see, from the gate, I believe there was a conspiracy to put this on the young black kid. Okay, you know, I mean, and it's just a horrible thing. He's never had any trouble. And then my understanding is that the whole time that they were working a crime scene, you know, that day, the kid was still there in front of his friends because that's where he hang out. That's where he hangs out at. He was there the whole time. And then so sometime around, I think it's 3:30 or 4 o'clock or so, they decide, hey, we're going to charge this kid to take him into custody. Now, this is the point that I have been vehemently putting out in my blog. Now, what information did they obtain from the crime scene to finger this kid? The woman apparently never told anyone that Shannon was the guy. In fact, there are police reports out there. Although I haven't seen them, but I'm told that they're out there, they do exist, that the woman stated that Shannon didn't shoot her. Okay, he wasn't the person who shot her. And then if you look at the affiance reports, which are, you know, Deputy Barrett from the Franklin County Sheriff's Department and then Lieutenant Little of the Youngsville Police Department, in their reports, they both state, okay, that the woman, the victim, said that someone, okay, came from behind a sliding glass door and struck her with a pole. That's one account. Okay, the second account is that she stepped out of her bedroom on the second floor and someone struck her, who was hiding in a closet, struck her with a pole. All right, her saying someone, meaning that she didn't know. I mean, that's a no-brainer. She didn't know who hit her or shot her. You know, and then in the reports itself, it doesn't even say that she knew she was shot. So, you know, how do you charge this kid when the lady says that he didn't do it, number one, or number two, she don't know who did it, according to the police reports, and then the kid had no criminal past? There's no way they could process forensics, whether DNA or anything like that, from the crime scene within a 12-hour period. The kid never had been booked. He had never been in trouble before, so they didn't have his fingerprints. They wouldn't have his fingerprints or DNA until after he was initially arrested. So what information did they get to charge this kid?
Right. Can you have, let me give you my information, or can you call me, say, about 6:15 tonight? I want to get all your contact information, and I'd like you to send me a link to your blog so the readers can read it. And I'd like to get together with you sometime in the next month or so or less. I'm going to have the young man, Shannon's mother, on my show on next Friday. So I'd like you to come on again next Friday to add some further content to what the mother's saying. And then we need to get together because I spoke to, what's the young lady's name from?
Rosa Garvin from Nan? Rosa Garvin.
Right. I'm going to meet with her. And see if maybe if all three of us can meet sometime to see how, because this is something I believe that needs to be out of the hands of the local DA and possibly to the state's attorney general or to the U.S. attorney. Because how do you hold somebody in prison without habeas corpus? I mean, that doesn't even make any sense. You're
violating the basic tenets of American
system. We already got affluenza. So what is this, poor Luenza? I mean, this is ludicrous. This is completely ludicrous. So I'd like you to call me back about 6:15 to 6:30 tonight so we can talk further on this. And something needs to be done. This is beyond the pale. Is that good?
Right. Well, I can give you the blog. I can give you my blog. My blog is thepeopleschampion.me. That's thepeopleschampion.m. M as in Mary, E as in Edward. Okay, I've written a number of articles, and I've done extensive research on this particular case. The evidence is there. You'll find actual court documents, actual police reports from this particular case that are there. And you can see that this one, you know, smells from high heaven. Stevie Wonder could see that something's wrong in this case.
A people's champion dot what?
M-80.
Okay, very good.
Yeah.
And David?
I'm just trying to figure out how we get from every witness there describing a white male with a white T-shirt and blue hat running away to arresting this boy. I'm dumbfounded.
Well, David, I need to go right now, but thank you for calling. And can you call me? You have my number, right? Call me between 6:15 and 6:30 tonight.
Okay. What is your number, sir?
I'm sorry. It's 704.
Uh-huh.
458-8150.
Uh-huh. 6150?
Right. No, 8150.
No problem, sir. I'll give you a call, Mr. Lawson.
Needs to be broadcast. And I really need to.
Then we could get it on. I thought that Reverend Sharpton had a story about this once.
Yes, they
but
do.
We should try to get
Rosa
it on the national.
Well, Rosa has something on this, I believe. Is that right, Mr. Adams? Isn't it true, Rosa?
That's correct. Yeah, we did reach out to them. I actually spoke to one of their crisis managers up here out of Harlem, and she forwarded us to Ms. Garvin down there in Charlotte. So, yes, this is a case that they're definitely looking into.
Okay, right. I really appreciate your calling into the show, and this is something that we all need to make sure we have something on, because this is just going. It's unbelievable. Correct. Unbelievable. I appreciate you. Give us a call. I'll speak to you later tonight.
Will do, sir. Thank you. Thank you, Charlie.
Bye-bye. Can you believe this? Is this
Seth? Is what it is. I mean, look, we were looking in the article. The guy had just graduated from high school. He was signed up, ready to go into the military.
Mm-hmm.
And then now he's been incognito in solitary confinement in a prison for a year with no charges, no nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's not on the docket now, so there's still not even nothing happening right now.
I can't even imagine.
Now,
this,
here's the one thing, because we don't know, of course, the details of what the police have,
mm-hmm.
evidence-wise,
right.
or whatever, as to why they suddenly went from, you know, the white thug leaves the scene that everybody knows,
right.
and chose, and even have the picture of him in his same outfit with
right.
the money. But hey, let's ignore all that, you know, because he's related to the sheriff or something. I don't know how they got to this kid, but it reeks of this guy being A, he's black. But B, he's also it's the immigrant story. You know, he's not one of us, so he's the easy victim. They can just choose him because, you know, hey, nobody gets hurt. There's nobody there
That's
for
right.
him because,
Absolutely.
You know, his family or his relatives are all in Kenya.
Uh-huh.
So this kid is just a perfect victim for this to be pinned with this crime. Which is pathetic and sad. Because this is something like out of the 1950s instead of today.
Mississippi's burning.
I mean, it's just terrible. It's, and it just reeks of all the whole case of, you know, you've got the, you can't arrest the white guy. You got to get the black guy. And then, of course, now they're saying, I've seen several articles here that he's supposedly, they're saying he was the boyfriend of the daughter.
Yeah. Well, that's what I heard.
Or, you know, who was this other guy that has the money that was at the house?
And there was two of them, is this right?
Yeah, in the pictures. So, you know, it makes you just... And they said everybody knows him. He's in this area and he's wandering around. And then when this, as Mr. Adams just said, suddenly the police say, well, a confidential informant told us. Well, you know what? When you've got the sheriff's relative, you know, his little nephew or something, cruising around this neighborhood all the time, getting involved in all kind of stuff constantly, but never getting arrested. And then a confidential informant with something he's involved in can get this guy charged with a murder. It suddenly sounds like you know exactly who the confidential informant and who the person in the community is.
Well,
so it's kind of
I am looking for a something very similar to that right now, and it really is. It really reeks.
Well, the whole thing reeks. And what bothers me is I don't care. Let's say the guy's guilty. Let's say he got, you know, his mind twisted around this girl and he wanted to wipe out the mom or whatever. Then charge him and put him on trial and do it, you know, in the light of day in a court and let everybody see the evidence and hear the evidence and let justice be done. But don't play this game where the kid is just locked up like it's, you know, Angola prison down there somewhere, and you know, put him in the hole, you know, and he's in solitary, and there's reports I'm seeing here online, human rights for prisoners and stuff, there are reports that he's been tortured. I mean, the kid's been kept in solitary for a year. He's not charged. You know, call him. This is a violation of human rights. It doesn't matter if he's guilty or not. It's a violation of rights. So something needs to change.
Well, I am in the...
And I do hope that we have an attorney general that will step in, because it sounds like this county is not doing its job.
Well, I am in the process of now looking for the clip that I had and it's included here. We have a couple of people who are going to be on the show today. Let's see. Yes.
Again, so
now,
I mean, we'll take care of this more next
you
week.
You said you told me you heard about this.
Yeah, I actually heard about it on TV and on Facebook, because there was a movement on Facebook for like a petition and things like that, and they were doing a march and stuff for him. So that's how I heard about it. And then I thought it was a Rachel Maddow, but I think it was maybe actually Reverend Sharpton is where I saw it on TV, but it was a while back. It wasn't just recently. But I remember hearing about it because it caught my eye, because it sounds so bizarre. You just can't, you know, it's like the story doesn't make sense at all. And it literally, that's why it reeks, is because it's not even like a, well, maybe, you know, it's like this doesn't even make sense at all. So I think that it's a case of racism, cover-up, and easy victim good here. I think that's what.
Well, okay. Let's go to one of the we have a major races here for District 40 and District 12. Well, as a District 40 is to fill Malcolm Graham's seat, Senator, State Senator Malcolm Graham, who is now running for the U.S. House, District 12, which Mel White has. Now, there is 5,000 people running for the seat.
Right.
But we have today one of the number one candidates.
Our superstar.
Absolutely. Well, everybody says it's a superstar.
Well, no, this one's our local superstar.
Yes, local
we superstar. Know this one. Hey.
And his name is George Battle. We have, I interviewed him at the State Executive Committee meeting last Saturday. And before he comes on, I'd like to play just a short clip.
This is Michael Lawson at the State Executive Committee meeting in Mecklenburg County, Charlotte, North Carolina. This is February the 1st.
Yeah.
February the 1st. I can't remember that day going by so fast. I am here with Mr. George Battle, who is running for
United States House of Representatives, District 12.
And why did you decide to run for this seat?
Well, Michael, it's simple. I just look at what's going on in our country today, and I'm scared for my children. I'm scared that they're not going to be able to grow up in the type of country that I grew up in, where they work hard. If you studied hard and you kept out of trouble, you had a chance to be successful. I want to go to Congress and be a voice there for the people who don't have them.
People who don't have them.
I want to go to Congress and work on these issues like education and health care that we can't seem to get traction on. I want to be a serious person at the table following in the footsteps of our great Congressman Mel Watt and continue that tradition and build it.
Well, you're entering the house or the den of iniquity with all them regressive party members there. And if you don't take over the house, it's going to be the same thing over and over, nothing done, except they might pass another bill to kill Obamacare.
Well, I think that's why we need strong voices on our side, on the Democratic side up there. I don't think we can afford to just send anybody up there. I have 15 years of experience, substantive experience in the areas of education and health care, primarily with federal law and policy. And so I'm going up there to get my voice. But you're right. Nothing's going to change. The ultimate power is in the hands of the people. And I think that people at this point in our country, Democrats and Republicans, are fed up with this obstruction. And so I'm hopelessly optimistic, but I'm optimistic that we're going to see a change in the next few years in the makeup of our government.
Well, you know, right now we have a president who, in his first term, probably passed more legislation or as much legislation than any other president in the history of this country and cannot get anything done because he don't write bills. The House creates the bills. He doesn't do nothing but sign them. What could you add or help to this present house that would might change some minds?
Well, I think one thing we need to do as Democrats, we need to be better about communicating our vision for the future. We've been really good at the state level and at the federal level of saying what we're against. But we need to follow President Obama's lead, communicate our vision constantly. But ultimately, it is in the hands of the people. I wish I could say I'm going to go there and set the world on fire and everybody's going to start working for the betterment of the country. But I know that's not going to happen. But I can be a strong voice there. I can be a good communicator of what my vision is and what our party's vision
what our
is for the country.
Is for the country.
And I can be a serious person there.
Serious
somebody
person
who
there.
Has been involved in education policy and health care policy. And, you know, be a person who has the ear of his colleagues. So.
Well, you're going to be coming on with a little larger explanation on the upcoming show. I believe that's the 7th of December. 7th of January. February, I'm getting all my days crossed here. But so I won't go into asking about that. But are you a Mecklenburg, Charlotte native?
Yes, sir. I'm about as close as they come. I moved here when I was 1 year old in January of 1974, so I've been here ever since. So I am a child of Charlotte Mecklenburg, proud graduate of West Charlotte High School. Mayor Fox was a couple years ahead of me out there, but love the city, and it is home.
Well, thank you, George Battle, and I wanted to say good luck, and we will speak to you again on Friday of the upcoming week. Thank you.
George Battle said this: these are serious times for our country, and we need serious people who are dedicated to finding solutions to our most pressing problems.
You mean shutting down the government and squatting in the corner isn't a solution?
It might be. Welcome, George Battle. How are you?
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. I'm doing fine. How are y'all doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. Well, I had to get a shot in my knee the other day because I was walking around too much, and sciatica is killing me. But other than that,
well,
other than that,
hey, I just want to say, Mr. Battle, one of the reasons I say you're super, because you come from a that I like the most. Now, my grandparents and my mother were all teachers. And I love teachers. I love education.
Okay.
And I think it's the most important thing that we do is to educate the next generation. Because without that, there is no future. So I applaud you for coming from that arena and taking the bite to, go under fire in Washington or wherever you want to go to do things for us. I like that.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it. And our teachers are our true heroes. I I do a small part in supporting them and trying to keep them out of court and helping them, you know, through the myriad of laws, them and administrators through the myriad of laws that we find ourselves subject to in education. But I think you're exactly right. Our teachers are our heroes, and I'm very proud to have been involved in a small way of trying to move the ball forward and trying to play a support role for them, those who are the true superstars.
Well, you know, you're not just whistling in the dark, because, listen, I would tell you something, George. When I first moved to Charlotte, because I'm not from these parts, I'm from New York City.
Your accent sounds so familiar.
Yeah, that, well, you know, the thing is that I've been here since 86, and they still tell me I ain't from these parts. So, you know, I tell this shit. You interloper. So the thing
you
is,
I
didn't get the y'all.
Y'all
well,
down.
The thing is, my daughter went to Northwest School of the Arts, and I taught there as a parent volunteer. I created a media literacy program. I thought it was just going to be, you know, one term, but it wound up being 9.5 years.
Wow.
And I taught every day 3 to 4 subjects, programs or five that I created a day for free.
Wow.
Never got paid. So I see what teachers go through. I saw teachers that, I'm telling you the truth, weren't worth a damn. But they were so far from the reality of what teachers do. 95-98% of the teachers are there. And, you know, the one thing I found out, and I taught at the Crossroads Charter School when it first started, the one thing that I remember, the one thing, because I was on the board at Crossroads, kids don't give 2 cents whether you know the subject or not. They care about what you care about them. And they can tell in the first 15 minutes whether you care about them, because anybody can learn and teach from a book. But if you know your kids, you know their attitudes, you know how to cajole them, you can teach them anything. In 9.5 years, I had one problem in my class with a young lady, and I put her out of the class. That's the only time. So that's complete absolute nonsense.
Again, there's understanding children and the process.
Absolutely.
You know, that's one thing that now this is just slightly off subject, getting on to education, but one thing that that makes me mad, the standardization in education nowadays is where they try to literally just one size fits all teach. You can't. Every time you're in a class, like you got 30 kids, guess what? You've got 30 different styles of teaching. You've got to know children and know how to teach them because they're all different.
Now that they're talking about me since I'm for Congress, what are you going to do? Since we know all about this teaching and education, what would you bring to the table to try to further, and I'd like to talk to you about this offline, my idea.
Sure.
Further help kids learn. What would you bring to the Congress to try to get done that would help kids learn?
Well, the first two things I want to do, Michael, is dispel two fallacies we have about education. The first fallacy is that 17 hours that kids spend outside of school as a K-12 situation, the 17 hours they spend outside of school, you can overcome anything that happens in 7 hours. That is absolutely false. We got to look at the whole child. We can't send children to school hungry. We can't send children to school where they're in communities with all the vestiges of poverty, with crime, with absentee parents, and expect for them to be successful. So I want to dispel that. We need to look at holistic solutions. The second thing is that no matter how many tests we do, no matter how many impositions we put on teachers, no matter how much other stuff we do, we're going to have to fund our education system. The funding is going to have to match the talk. Our education system has been chronically underfunded, and until we get to the point where our children are learning in facilities that are worthy of their learning, until teachers are paid like professionals, until children have access to technology, access to up-to-date textbooks. We are not going to make progress on education, no matter how many new initiatives we try, no matter how many gimmicks we have. So that's I think, the key, is dispelling those two things. Now, specifically, one thing I want to do is to work with my colleagues to start looking at K-12 education like we look at military funding. You know, when we go to war, we have an attitude, do whatever it takes to win. And that's what we ought to have in education as well. Because make no mistake about it, we're in a war for our survival as a superpower in this 21st century. Other societies around the globe are investing in their children. They're investing in their education. We need to do the same. So long story short, I'm going to dispel those two fallacies. You know, one, that you can overcome anything that happens outside of school in school, and two, that education needs to be funded just like any of our other national security priorities.
I'm pretty impressed, Mike. I'm looking at my checkpoints, and that's pretty much all of it, and it seems to be the exact opposite of the Republican Party.
Well, you see, here's the thing. In order, see, the Republican Party, then I'm sorry, the Regressive Party, their idea is to, one, stop as many people as you can that you can voting. And how do you stop them from voting? Is to kill education so they don't know what it means to vote.
Absolutely.
Stop
them
from and don't tell them why they need to vote. You stop them from learning what is necessary to compete in the world, because it is all to them. It's all about, they know that they are on the precipice of not ever winning another national election. So it's all about now getting all the county commissions and all the city councils and all the judges and all the sheriffs in place. So even if they don't win another national election, it's all about getting back to states' rights, where the states control everything. So,
we see that right now. I mean, with the health care, where they're having several states are refusing it and dragging their heels all the way.
And not switching here, because I don't know if that's going to be one of the main things that you are going to try to do when you become the U.S. representative. But I know that you're involved with trying to get everybody on Medicare after 50. Well, I mean, you know, the thing is, we should have everybody from the day they're born on Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
Because
right.
Every single payer, every single country, major country in the world. I have a cousin of mine who lives in Toronto, Canada. And they talk to them like a dog. Oh, that, who wants that? Look, she says, I get sick, I'm going to see my doctor. I get sick, well, I'm going to have the operation. How bad is this operation going to be? Oh, it's something elective surgery. I'll wait 2 weeks. Otherwise, I get the operation then, and I don't pay anything. Now, their drugs, I get my drugs from Canada because they're cheaper. And I give you, for instance, here, the Medco. I don't know if you ever hear of Medco.
Yes,
pharmacy?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Medco, sponsor. I get a drug for them, and it's called Dexilant. It's supposed to be for indigestion. It's like Nexium. Okay.
Yeah.
It's so my insurance company doesn't cover it. Okay. It's $173 for 30 pills. I get it from Medco. For $71 for 90 pills.
Wow.
Now, what's the story? Is there something wrong with this picture? Hell yes.
Something very wrong. And I think I agree with you, Mike. I think healthcare is a right, not a privilege. But what I will say is it has taken us, healthcare reform, it's ironic, has been part of every presidential campaign since the turn of the century. And by turn of the century, I mean the turn of the 20th century, with Theodore Roosevelt and that crap. And I think it's taken us this long to get to Obamacare, which, by the way, if folks will read it, it is almost exactly the same, not as Romney Care, but as a Republican alternative offered in 1994 to Clinton Care. So I think the arc of history is going to be bent toward, you know, single payer, but as an incremental step, because it seems like we're better at that these days, I propose, you know, having everybody 50 and over covered by Medicare, because generally as we get aged, we use health care services more and people are a little sicker, and that takes, you know, that will help folks who are 50 and older pay their bills before, you know, in that gap between when they would naturally go into Medicare under the current law, and also help younger people because it will remove some of the price pressure that the insurance companies have tried to shift by making younger, healthier folks bear the burden and pay the cost for older folks who use services. So I totally agree with you. I think we need to realize as a society, just like education with health care, we pay for it one way or the other.
Well, right. I think is that your first house bill that you just started right there? Is that your first?
Well, no, I will tell you what my first house bill will be. My first house bill will be, to your point, to a voting rights bill. I want to introduce a bill that will set a set of standards nationwide for federal elections. So if you vote for president, Congress, U.S. Senate, anywhere in the country, the rules are the same. No voter ID. You just have to be 18 and an American citizen. And so, with the way our Constitution is set up, you know, clearly states have a right to regulate state elections, but the federal government, I think, clearly has a right to regulate federal elections.
Well, how would you prove that you are an American citizen? What would you have to do?
I think it's the opposite. You don't prove you're an American citizen. Somebody has to disprove it. I mean, there is no in-person voter fraud. We are all those of us who are American citizens endowed with the right to vote. And if you want to take somebody's fundamental right, as it says in our Constitution, then you have to do so through due process of law. We shouldn't have to prove that we are entitled to a vote. We are entitled by birth to vote in this country. We are entitled by becoming citizens, those of us who were not born here, to vote. There is no evidence whatsoever about in-person voting fraud. No evidence whatsoever.
Even if you're born in Hawaii?
Last I checked, Hawaii was a state as well, so maybe we need to tell some of our colleagues in the Regressive Party that that's the case.
Yeah, well, a lot of people don't think Hawaii is part of the country.
Yeah.
But
well, here's
the last thing I wanted to say, you know, you can still run for president if you were born in Kenya, as long as your mother was born here. And that's the problem. I've never heard them say that. Because why is Senator Cruz running when he was born in Canada?
Right. Or John McCain was born in Panama.
Right.
John McCain, exactly.
Your parents are from here. You're automatically a citizen.
Not even a parent.
Unless you give
it up. Or your mother. Your mother has to be born here. That's it. Closed door. Don't matter where your father was born. Your mother was born here. You are a citizen. And people need to read that further down in the Constitution. So, you know, but one other thing before I let you go, you know you're busy. And
I want to, because this is very important, it's his first bill. I may not have time to redress this against the Congress. I just want to make sure, better on your first bill, you better have bold letters at the bottom that says, this reform does not include it. It needs to be a very simple ballot. There can't be any arrows and lines squiggling around the page that end up at the bottom.
Right.
Okay.
That's
but other than that, go
that's
ahead.
Right. That's right. No, I think that's a good. No hanging chad. None of that.
No chad at all. And so what I'd like you to do is to give us a call in next week, because I want to further break on how you would get all the same people president has to face vote for this bill. when you become a congressman.
And I got simple solution for that.
I'll save that for next week,
but it's a very simple solution.
Well, hey, when you deal with simpletons, you got to have a simpleton solution.
That's exactly right.
Okay, Mr. George Battle, running for U.S. Congress District 12, and we will speak to you next week. Thank you.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye. That was Mr. George Battle. And we have another person on the phone right now. Let's see. They've been hanging for about 4 minutes here. Hello. Who's this? Hello? Hello? I guess they don't want to listen. I don't want to talk. But that's all right. You can listen to the show. We're going great guns. George Battle is a very interesting man.
Yes, I'm really excited when I hear candidates just talking about important but simple solutions to things. I love that he says, because I've said it for years, education needs to be a top priority. We need to invest in it.
That's right.
And not just throw words at it. Because I get so tired of all of this, you know, education is important, but yet we're going to cut funding to schools.
Absolutely.
We're going to cut salaries to teachers.
Yeah.
We're going to cut back on everything. But put your kids out in a rusty trailer out back, but it's important to them.
Yeah.
How is that? These two things don't match.
And don't worry about the kid that's going berserk in the trailer, or don't worry about the moron that's going to come up and try to break in the trailer and shoot up the trailer. Don't worry about that. Oh, how far is it? The trailer is very close. You have to take a car to the trailer, bus to the trailer.
And if the poor lady that is getting paid minimum wage to teach the kids has to deal with 40 or 50 kids in the classroom, whatever. Hey, it's all
50
equal.
Kids?
You know,
come on.
All you got to do is color in the bubble. You're good.
Yes, you know. Color in the bubble. Huh?
Yeah, that makes me mad. So I'm glad to hear it. I was really excited. You know, I'm looking at his site. By the way, we didn't get to let him do this, but I wanted to tell y'all, go check it out. You can read about his issues, read about his background. But it is georgebattle.com.
Georgebattle.com?
That is Battle for Congress. Yeah.
Battle for Congress.
I like that name too, man. It just lends itself to all kind of cool posters and T-shirts.
Well, you know, the thing is that we're going to have a lot of the people running for office on the show.
It's that year. And listeners, that means you. It is that year. Start paying attention. Start boning up on the issues. Start wanting to go and vote. Because if you don't, you may not have to worry about it again in your lifetime. You may have that right taken away from you.
Well, you know, but then you might become like this.
And you know what? And you know what? And you know what? Let me tell you this. You know what? It's people who raise their voices and yell and scream like you that are dividing this country.
Hey, Gail, you know what? First off, it's none of your business. I don't ask you where you send your kids to school. Don't bother me about where I send mine.
Did I say on topic? Are you stupid? On topic.
Thank you all very much, and I'm sorry for the idiot over there.
And let me tell you something. After you graduate from law school, you can dust yourself like that in the courtroom. Your rear end's going to get thrown in jail, idiot.
That is a system that has failed. After footing the bill, the American people deserve something that works or start over.
I would submit that the average American looking in on this hearing this morning is going to feel like there's really nobody in charge.
Well, but this is what we have.
There's no one in
and
charge.
See, you can become, just like Chris Christie, a bully. Mm-hmm. You can tell people, hey, I'm in charge here. And most people don't understand about New Jersey politics. The Jersey governor.
Everything you need to know is on The Sopranos. Now on DVD.
Everything you need to know. The Jersey governor has more power than any governor in the United States.
And we're not talking about, like, you know, relative size, like big buffoonery Texas.
No.
But we're talking about actual legislative power.
The
things he can do as governor.
That's right.
Are far
would
more
make your head
than
swirl,
like,
around like the Exorcist.
Well, for all of their boot scooting, oil derrick jumping antics, Texas governor, for instance, has virtually no power. They're one of the weakest governors in the entire United States.
Yes, that's right.
New Jersey happens to be one of the strongest. So, I mean, and this is things that, you know, listeners, y'all can become aware of. Know what your state is like. Go and research. Find out, is your Congress strong or is your governor strong? You know, who has the real power?
Well, here's the thing. Governor Christie, the U.S. appoints the attorney general. Attorney general don't run there. The governor appoints the attorney general.
Yeah, but it's hard to start an investigation when your friend's in office, right?
The governor appoints every single commissioner.
Yeah.
The governor can cut off funding for any state, any county, without any oversight.
And he can also close bridges anytime he likes.
Even if he don't know he's closing it.
With little red cone.
Well, even if he don't know he's closing it, he can close it.
Yeah.
Because he has the ditto heads that will follow.
Apparently, unlimited power.
I mean, here, Kendall Coffey was on one of the shows the other day, and he was talking about the lieutenant governor also runs, but she is a ditto head. And she's a dodo because she's going to be really in trouble if they find out that she tried to bribe the mayor of, what was her name, Mayor Zimmerman.
Yep.
She's from New Jersey? She's New Jersey? Where is she? The Jersey?
She's one of the mayors.
Right, but she's from Jersey, correct? Let's see here. Yeah, mayor's there, man. I want to get that wrong. But anyway,
yeah,
she's
actually all of our paperwork. I don't have it with me from last week. Had it right up on Zimmerman.
I have it right here. I have it as
look at that.
Fat Rush Limbaugh says, in my formerly nicotine-stained fingers, but of course I never had nicotine.
Zimmerman.
Anyway, what he did was he sent the lieutenant governor to Mayor Zimmerman to tell her if she did, she's from Hoboken, I believe.
Don Zimmerman.
From Hoboken, right?
Uh-huh.
If she did not get on board with endorsing him, she wasn't getting the funding because Hoboken was 80% underwater. Now, I say 50%, 80%. Or possibly higher. And she told the lieutenant, and the lieutenant governor put it like this, you know, I know this is not right, and if you say anything about it, I'll deny it. But if you don't get on board, you're not getting the money to build Jack. So, she asked for $100 million. She got $2 million. That couldn't open up the garage that was underwater.
Right.
So, thing is that the case they are building against Chris Christie is a RICO case.
Yeah. And it isn't just the bridge that everybody's making fun of or anything like that. If you notice, it goes far beyond that.
Oh, absolutely.
About blocking federal funding to people who need it and redirecting it to friends and developers and other contributors who can do things like just build high-end high-rises and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What,
and that is where we
where
get
was that at?
Federal
that was,
statute.
Yeah, where was that? That was in some little...
Oh, even in Hoboken, for instance. Remember that this whole thing originally came about where they were trying with that group, that Rockefeller group, to build massive
now,
development.
Rockefeller says...
Which is not the Rockefeller...
Their family... Group, that's the right. That's right. They once were part... they used their name, the Rockefeller Group, to build other buildings, but they are no part of Rockefeller, who's dead, or anybody. The Rockefeller is in Congress right now, so they're just using that name.
Yeah, they said the words were that the two aides of the governor told her her town would starve if she didn't do what they said.
Now,
if she wanted aid and didn't. Kowtow to the master.
I mean, you know, is this becoming, it's obscene now. This man now, Chris Donut Christie, if he can't even appear. He's the head of the president or the chairman of the governors of the Republican Party in this country. He can't even appear with any of them in public. They won't even appear with him. Only it's in private.
Right.
And the most corrupt governor, and you say, hey, Christie's corrupt. He does, his stuff is in patronage and all this other stuff. But that governor down there in Florida is an outright criminal. He has paid back a fraud complaint that he was convicted for by the U.S. attorney for over $1.8 billion. That tells you how much money he has.
Mm-hmm.
And he was still elected mayor. I mean, governor.
Governor, yeah. And that's the thing.
Because people forget. And they also forget when you put money in their hands.
Well, they don't forget. But the Republicans, I mean, you got to look at these guys. I thought it was very telling. Rachel Maddow, a couple weeks ago, did a little segment. She said, let's look at that, you know, that freshman class and that wave of Republicans that came in response to after Obama's huge landslide when he went into power. The next, you know, 2 years later, whatever, when they changed Congress, they suddenly got a whole bunch of, you know, Republicans. But she said, let's look at this, because in that election last time, after years, they had three states turned over to red governors. Now, she looked at all three. One of them, by the way, was New Jersey, Christie. Right? But anyway, they were looking at the three states. All three of them, one's already in federal prison, one's going to federal prison, and Chris Christie's under investigation right now, and you know where he's ending up. So three for three. It's not like three out of 100 or out of 1,000 or out of anything. No, the only three Republican governors have already, they haven't even served out their terms, they're already all going to prison for crimes. And the ones who haven't been caught yet, you know, these guys like in Florida, they're already convicted criminals that have been put in. That seems to be, I don't know, a normal course of action for these people. And it's very disturbing. I don't understand. Like, okay, let's say, sorry about that. Let's say that you are a Christian conservative and you believe in family and the flag and mom's apple pie and you just want to play baseball every Saturday and all is beautiful and sunny. Why do you vote for lying criminals? That's what I can't understand. It's like there's two different parts of the party, and if you look at them, they're very distinct. There are people who just honestly have little conservative views and values and want that conservative. And then there are corporatists who only want money and power.
Corporate.
And they use...
Now, listen, don't use big words like that, because I'm not... what's a corporatist?
Is that easier to... But these people who want nothing but expanded, you know, money, all corporations have the same rights as humans, and the only thing that ever matters is turning a profit and screw everything else and burn everything else down. We just want to privatize everything, just like education. Let's defund public education, burn down all the buildings, and turn them into private businesses so that we can then make $100 billion for, you know, corporations. It's these kind of people that they use the flag and the language of church and mom's apple pie and that family values, you know, rhetoric, but they have nothing to do with that. And that's what I don't understand, why these honest conservative Christian voters keep getting duped over and over and over and over and over. Because all you got to do is wave a flag at them and say family values, and they just, like Pavlov's dogs, they salivate and vote.
Show a woman with asthma between her legs.
Yeah, but these guys don't have anything to do with those values at all. They're abject criminals.
They use it.
That are just raping.
They use it as a
society
MacGuffin.
Yeah, but I don't understand it. I just don't. It blows my mind.
Well, speaking about blowing your mind, you hear about the Pena brothers?
Oh, the Cox? I mean, Cokes?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I forget how they pronounce it.
The Koch brothers, yes.
K-O-C-H.
Yes.
Yes, the billionaires who hate America.
That's correct.
But
they love to take money.
Oh, no, they love their money, which, by the way, they didn't earn. They got from daddy. But they do love money. And here's the thing that really bothers me. And again, this is, you know, getting back to those values thing. They are the king of funding these groups that have names like Liberty and Freedom. And, you know, we've got all those neat names. If you look at their actual written and publicly spoken statements of what they want to come, did you know that they dissolve the United States government? Act one. They want to end federalism completely.
Uh-huh.
They say the United States government is wrong, that they need to return to a confederacy of states. So they are literally avowed anti-American, you know, that's in some parts called treasonous, but anti-American, anti-federal government people.
Well,
that's all they work for. That's what they want. They want to end the federal government, which is why all their Tea Party candidates, when they go in, they say, we're going to dissolve all the cabinets, and we're going to dissolve all the agencies, and we're going to do away with regulations. You know, that you remember all that? Yeah, that's what they come up with. We don't need a Department of Education. We don't need a Department of the Environment or anything else. Blah, blah, blah. It's all overblown government overreach. Blah, you know. They don't want government at all. And people need to think about that.
They don't want government at all, what do they want?
They just, look, if there's no government, guess what impedes their acquisition of wealth?
Let me see.
Absolutely nothing.
So you're saying that
if you dissolve all government, you don't have things like laws and military or anything else to protect you, right? You have whatever you, maybe a couple of neighbors, or maybe your town, or maybe you can organize a whole county together to stand up against somebody. And somebody who's got literally billions upon billions of dollars, I bet you money.
Well,
outgun you every day.
Is this the reason why Frank Hall, Regressive Party Representative Frank Hall, took this question from a woman?
You're trying to get the question to get along. If everybody's so unhappy with what the president's done, why don't you impeach him? And I'll give you a real frank answer about that. If we were to impeach the president tomorrow, you could probably get the votes in the House of Representatives.
That was kind of difficult. But the woman asked Frankenhall, why do we impeach Obama? And then another person said this.
I need for you is to know what you can do, you and your fellow non-communist colleagues in the lower house, what you can do to stop these communist tyrannical executive orders laid down by this foreign-born American-hating communist despot. What can you do for me?
And so they want to know what they could do to appease this communist, socialist Obama. But then you have Senator Rand Paul.
Rand Paul turns a lot of heads in the political world with his recent references to Bill Clinton as a, quote, sexual predator. In an interview now on C-SPAN, airing in full this Sunday with Steve Scully, Senator Paul took his criticism of President Clinton one step further, putting pressure on the Democratic Party. Look.
They can't have it both ways, and so I really think that anybody wants to take money from Bill Clinton or have a fundraiser has a lot of explaining to do. In fact, I think they should give the money back. If they want to take a position on women's rights, by all means do, but you can't do it and take it from a guy who is using his position of authority to take advantage of young women in the workplace. I mean, for goodness sakes, he paid an $800,000 fine for sexual harassment. So he admitted to it in one court case and really, I think, has been convicted in the public place for the other sexual harassment.
They're still talking about Clinton. Will they be talking about him when he's dead?
Yes.
They'll come back and try to do something?
It's all about, you remember our Harold Rober, you know, Carl, our good old buddy Carl. Brother Carl loved words. And one of the things that he brought into the arena is kind of a Goebbels-esque
that's
language.
Such a word. Now, what the heck is a Goebbels-esque?
I don't know. Maybe look it up. But he brings in that use of language as a weapon and to change the dynamics around a word or its meaning. And he did a very good job. For instance, one of the most famous is how he denigrated. He said he wanted to turn liberal into a bad word. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And then all the liberals got all worried and scared, and they because they were called, they were said they were terrorists and crooks and everything, and you know, all the way around. So then finally they started saying, well, then we're progressives. We're this, that, the, you know. They didn't want to say liberal anymore. And that's what they do. They do the same thing with the Clintons. They, every time you even mention Clinton now, they'll foam at the mouth and screech about, you know, sexual predators and evil. And, you know, he's such a lying scumbag. But that's what they do. They turn things into absolute negatives, and they will continue on and on and on and on and on and on because of the echo chamber, but that drives it into the American psyche. Whereas if, say, the billionaire Koch brothers want to have an organization named Freedom Works or Libertyville or, you know, dun, 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 welcome to the Statue of Liberty. .com, you know, whatever, they will do that, and then they sound wonderful.
Well,
nice.
The thing that I want to understand, how do people think that that's even remotely possible? That what does Bill Clinton, what is Bill Clinton doing? Is that running?
He's doing a lot. He's helping people all over the world.
Right, but what he wants, what I think
better
Ron
question,
Paul.
What do the Bushes do? They don't do anything.
What I think he was trying to say in some way, shape, or form was getting around to not voting for Hillary,
mm-hmm.
not getting any money for Hillary, so she couldn't get any money to run. And using, because he said anybody that takes any money from Bill Clinton through his Clinton Initiative is a scumbag.
Right.
And
you're tainted.
But the why is
place we can play Tainted Love right.
Right.
There. Insert Tainted Love.
Why are we fooling around with this man? Well, you got Daddy Bush and Junior Bush with him and. And everybody knows there's nobody holier than Jimmy Carter.
Yeah.
They're but Jimmy Carter don't like him that
way. You got to understand that these guys are long-range players. They've been around forever. People forget the Koch brothers. You go look up and look into them. They have been, even in the 1980s, they were under investigations for their activities. The Justice Department was after them.
Mm-hmm.
They almost destroyed Bob Dole's career. They and their oil companies were in a broad pattern. This is the Justice Department itself said they had a broad pattern of criminal behavior,
mm-hmm.
and they seem to have been operating as a criminal conspiracy to influence and or take over the government. And then, as soon as the Republicans took over the Congress in 92. The whole thing was dropped instantly. They killed the investigation right when they were about to be prosecuted. And it was a huge outrage at the time. This is a major deal. But it keeps going. I mean, year after year, look into it. And then in 95, they were reindicted. 91, 92. Look into all the stuff they do. And it's constantly they like to buy politicians. They like to go in. They like to write laws. They like to insert them into communities. They do it on a local level, on a state level, and on a national level. They're one of the number one contributors to all of the anti-gay, all of the, you know, anti-gay marriage, all of the any anti-liberal thing that you can think of, just about they're the funders of. It's just amazing. But they've been doing it for decades.
Mm-hmm.
And why aren't they in jail?
Well,
I'm at a loss.
This is a question. Why aren't they in jail? What the heck is the story with this that they're not in jail?
Well, they're because they buy enough, just like they did in 92 when they got their own, indictment squashed. They buy enough politicians to protect themselves. That's what I was talking about. And, look, they're the kings of deregulation. You got to understand, all their money is from oil and coal,
And
they want to deregulate. They don't like Clean Water Acts, Clean Air Acts, and all that. That's why all the Tea Partiers, even this year, even when
the sludge was pouring out of the faucets in West Virginia.
Just about to talk about that.
Well, even when that was happening, what did they do? They had the Tea Partiers.
Let them eat sludge. Oh,
they had the Tea Partiers put forth a bill to kill the Clean Water Act. So they couldn't be prosecuted because they're one of the partners in that firm. You know,
Well, this is what they're saying.
The problem is that it changed the script. Either that you can keep the SOB.
Again, and I didn't get the name of the representative. It's the first. He's a first-term regressive party moo-moo.
Oh, that's the lady. Wasn't it the lady who did the speech after Obama, or is that different?
No, no. This is another moo-moo. But anyway, she wants to impeach him. Now, they keep saying, yeah, we want to impeach him. We want to impeach him. Mm-hmm. We want to impeach him. What are they going to impeach him for?
Yeah, exactly.
The last time they impeached the president, the last time they impeached a president, they didn't get too far, did they? They lost it. Well, I'm not saying they lost the impeachment, but they lost the place in the minds of the American public.
Yeah.
But they have already lost that. They have slivers. You look on the map. And they have slivers.
Congressman Jim Bridenstine.
That's
it.
Jim Bridenstine.
He should be executed.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one. Jim Bridenstine. First year. And all he did was laugh.
Yeah.
He said, oh, boy, yeah, I thought you were a sweet old lady. He didn't say nothing about you. You shouldn't be saying that.
Right. Now, this is, to remind everybody, the President of the United States of America.
Right.
This is a man who is serving in the government with the President of the United States of America to uphold the law and honor of our country. And when people are saying, kill him, impeach the SOB, he said, oh, you're so sweet. That's awesome. Yay. Thanks for voting for me. Hey, can you write a check? You know.
And she took out her Social Security check and gave it over to him. And then she says, you know, I'm not getting a good Social Security check.
Because I keep giving it to SOBs like you. Just kidding.
I mean, no,
but yeah,
she's not kidding. She would turn over her Social Security check and say, it's because of Obama, I can't get a Social Security check. That's higher. No, your ass didn't get out there and work. That's the reason why you don't get a larger Social Security check. And I was doing some talking here.
Yeah, because, you know, Social Security, for those who don't understand, isn't given to you by the government.
It's not?
It's not a handout.
Oh, that's
no, right. It is your own money.
That you have worked for.
That you worked for over the years. They take that percentage and give it back to you in your age so that you can eat, turn on the heat, you know.
Well,
do a little watching of the TV.
And then they say, well, Social Security was not meant to do that. It was supposed to, you know, you were just supposed to have enough to play the lottery or run the horses. But anyway, the thing is that
just the normal.
I was looking at some of the what the returns on Social Security are. Mississippi has the lowest in the country.
Really? What a surprise.
The max is $253 a month. No, is it not the minimum? That's the minimum. $253. I think you have a max of no matter what you and see it goes by what you make. So you can check me on that and look it up, but I think it was $253 what I saw. Now, Massachusetts has the highest, I think it was $700.
I'm sorry, I fell into a horrible abyss. I was looking at that guy, impeached the SOB, and then I found a whole bunch of websites that are the Republicans that are just cheering it on, and they have all these things.
Progressive.
From everything.
Watch
from,
your mouth out with
those. They have everything from hanging him
not
to
Republicans.
Everything. It's just horrible. It's like a black hole.
Well, you know that's being monitored by
terror.
CIA.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
By, the Secret Service.
I hope so. I mean, these people are so thuggish.
Letterman said yesterday, he said, you know, just breaking the tension here from that. Letterman said, after the snow and the cold weather, so I believe we got potholes here. Normally everybody knows the potholes go around. He said, but they got potholes so big now, so deep, they found a 2,000-year-old city. And he said, and then next to it, the potholes are so deep, they're stocking them with bass. So, I mean, but that was
really
lovely to bring up. Anyway.
Well,
now, what about the billionaire moo-moos in Wisconsin? He said, this is from Washington, Eric Lipton, said, among the thousands of demonstrators who joined a Wisconsin state capitol grounds the past weekend was a well-financed advocate for Washington who was there to voice praise for cutting state spending by slashing union benefits, bargaining rights.
Because, you know, workers don't need benefits. Or
hell no. Oh, but didn't I just read, where is it they're building the Volkswagen plant? They're building the Volkswagen plant, and they are setting up, Volkswagen is setting up them to have their own union where they can set, where they can join the Teamsters. And the spokesperson said, we will get a lot of things done if this place is unionized. And this is Volkswagen. Mm-hmm. So I guess they'll repeal Volkswagen and send them the hell out of the country.
Again, all the, you know, unions built this country. And when we finally got union laws and safety and higher wages passed after the robber baron era, what did we see? We saw the boom of the greatest economy the world's ever seen, and America became number one on the entire planet, direct result of the creation of the largest middle class. Our whole population got wealthy.
They made one mistake. Because,
well,
you see, the robber baron just went back into their cave.
Yeah.
Now they're coming back out.
Yeah, well, that would be the, this is the, I want to invoke the Michael Lawson law.
Oh, no.
This is a law that you're supposed to use when killing monsters. Instead of killing them and then walking off and high-fiving and doing all that, he says you put the stake in and then you break it off so that they can't just pull it back out.
Below,
you know, like,
the skin.
You know all those monster movies where they go and they find the old crypt and they go walk in and Dracula's laying there withered up with a stake in him and they pull it out of his chest and then he goes and comes back. Yeah, that's what happens. No.
Okay.
Break it off.
You have to break it off so below the skin.
Yeah.
So they need tweezers or big pliers to pull it out.
And so that's what happened. That's why we have robber barons like the Koch brothers again.
Now, this guy, Tim Phillips.
So, Tim Phillips.
President of Americans for Prosperity.
See,
you know that
see,
group.
One of those names again. See, look, it's Americans. We're all Americans.
For prosperity.
Like, for prosperity. Who doesn't like that?
Hey.
But yet, these guys are for cutting your pay, cutting your benefits,
and
taking
raising
away
the hours that you work.
Yeah, and taking away any rights that you have to bargain.
Got no rights.
But you have no rights.
Nope.
This is a company,
this
and you work for us, so you take what you get.
That's right. He said, we are going to bring fiscal sanity back to this great nation.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you know, I said Mr. Phillips did not mention
little
nonprofit based nonprofit.
I like that nonprofit. Yeah.
Was whose budget surged to $40 million.
$40 million, people.
From $7 million 3 years ago, was created and financed in part by the secretive. The secretive.
Oh yeah, they're very
underground billionaire brothers Charles G. David. Hulk.
You're so kind on this.
You know, if you say their name three times by looking in the mirror, they'll come out right behind you.
Yeah, and beat you to death with a bag of money.
That's right. He says, state records also show that the Koch Industries, their energy and consumer products conglomerate, now see,
mm-hmm.
they're also in, did they start into?
And by the way, let me remind
yes.
you, this is the one in the 80s that they said, Koch Industries is a criminal enterprise. But continue reading
but
here, sir.
Let us not continue on that.
Mm-hmm.
Here's
the thing. Let's step back for a minute.
Yes,
and
back.
Remember where we are.
Where are we?
Is this mic on? Okay. The Wisconsin State Capitol grounds. Who do we know?
Is this difficult?
Let's see. They bought a governor.
What's his name? I know it.
So there was a certain governor that not like ours, or, well, the Carolinas next to us, that
oh, yeah.
used to like to walk the Appalachian Trail,
yeah.
but a walker, nonetheless. So Governor Walker, that they put in office up there, is the king. He's the poster boy. He
poster
is
boy.
Literally the man who killed unions. You know, he outlawed them up there.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're back for more because that wasn't enough, you know. Those union people, they're bleeding on the ground. They've been shot a few times. Let's finish it off. Let's have some corpses. So now they're back to curtail all the benefits and take away their rights to even talk, even beg for more. So go ahead. We're back in Wisconsin with our old buddy, Governor Walker.
Now,
isn't it funny how they're always the same group of guys?
Always the same group. Is that now state records also show that the Koch Industries that I was saying, this energy conglomerate based in Wichita, Kansas, I was born in Topeka.
Really?
Kansas, that's right.
Oh.
I didn't do nothing. Anyway, that must be them. Are they controlling the airways, too? Do they control blog talk radio?
Sure.
Now, was one of the biggest contributors to election campaign of Governor Scott, I can do whatever I want, Walker,
mm-hmm.
a regressive party member who has championed the proposed cuts.
Yes, a champion of cutting jobs.
Yes. Even before the new governor was sworn in last month, executives from the Koch-backed group had worked behind the scenes to try to encourage a union showdown. Mr. Phillips said in an interview on Monday, state governments have gone into the red, he said, in part because of the excessively generous pay and benefits that unions have been able to negotiate for teachers, police, firemen and other state and local employees. Oh, you know what? Let's get rid of all teachers, police, and firemen.
Right.
What the hell we need them for?
Right, again.
What do we need you, Mr. Koch?
Right. So here's the thing.
You're not teaching anybody anything. You're not policing anything. You definitely
right.
don't have your butt fucking
And this
fight.
Is the thing that makes me mental. You know, you're talking about American prosperity. American prosperity. These are their words they put on their organization to destroy Americans. And we talked about this earlier, about the war on language, the war on things. Why is it American? Why is it family values? Why is it patriotic to attack and tear down teachers and firefighters and doctors and people who are working to build America?
Well,
I don't understand this.
Well, you know,
if you build a bridge, you're doing something, you know. If you teach children, you're doing something. If you just stand around with your daddy's billions and just go, destroy them all. You don't have rights. You don't deserve pay. You know, what is that? How is that family values? I don't get it. So, I mean, look, this is what one of the things Mr. Edgar will introduce a new character. No, Mr. Edgar, he's just a guy who was out there to try to help. Bob Edgar. A former House Democrat who now works for Common Cause. That means a cause that's common to all of us. He says this is a very dangerous moment in American history because, as with anything in life, too much cock is a bad thing. But he says it's a dangerous moment in American history because it's not that these folks don't have the right to participate in politics. That's what all, you know, that's what the liberals.
You need a right?
That's what all of us want. We all can participate. But they are trying to move democracy out of the hands of people into the control of wealthy corporations. And guess what? These are the same type of people who vote to make corporations people.
Well, you know, back in the
good old days.
They had these places for the veterans when they came home,
mm-hmm.
these apartment complexes, because the veterans were coming home and they had no place to live. And these, you know, like Stuyvesant Village and things like that, and then the place when they died and whatnot, what did they do? Then have a place to burn and put them out to Potter's Field.
Mm-hmm.
And they got that from the movie It's a Wonderful Life.
Mm-hmm.
Potter, who was the man who owned the loan company, had one of the biggest loan companies, the millionaire there. People would go to him to borrow, and then he would put excessive, or is it called a big vig on their payback. And
a little screw.
You know, I'll give them someplace to live, Potter's Field.
Yeah.
When they die. But, you know, that shouldn't be done for veterans. But this is what they want to go back to now. They don't care. Forget about veterans. There's a last thing on their mind. All they want to have is the rich and the poor people working for the rich. They want people to depend upon them. But see, what has to happen is the people who aren't rich have to stop feeding these people, start fixing their breakfasts, start shopping for them, start taking care beyond the pale now. But, you know, we need somebody there in Congress who is going to put a stop to this.
Yep.
We can't do it while we have a Supreme Court that gave us that daggone verdict.
Yeah.
2 years ago.
But here's the thing we can do. We have an election coming up, just like we had a gentleman on the phone just a few minutes ago who was running to try to make it a better place. We can turn this around because let me just read like a statistic to you.
Right.
Out of all the states in the United States, mm-hmm. out of all of them, the only ones that are attacking workers' rights, the only ones that are trying to limit unions, limit the ability of the workers to even organize, only ones, the whole country,
mm-hmm.
Wisconsin, Ohio, Indiana, and now Pennsylvania. These are states that have, what's it called, Republican governors that just came into power.
Regressive.
So as soon as they come in, this is what they do. They're trying to do. And now, unfortunately, North Carolina is going that same way because they said we're looking at adopting the Wisconsin model here and limiting unions and everything. So this is what happens when you get a Republican agenda in the government. So think about that. You've got an election coming up. You can change your local government. You can change your state government. And you can stop this in its tracks. Because otherwise, I mean, it is a dangerous moment in like what Mr. Edgar said, dangerous moment in history where we're moving democracy out of the control of the people's hands into the control of corporations. Now, that is a very, very dangerous thing.
Well, let's listen to one of the candidates who is running, another one of the candidates is running for the District 12, the congressional district that Malcolm, Mel Watt had.
Michael Lawson here again, the SEC. It's Saturday, the 1st of February, and I am here with State Senator Malcolm Graham, who is running for?
Running for the United States Congress in the 12th Congressional District.
And what we had you on a week or so ago, and you gave us a lot of good inside information. So, but this is just going to be a short interview because you'll be coming on next Friday. You're going to be running. Let me ask you this question. Why do you want to run for a position where you have so many knuckleheads who don't, half of them don't know the Constitution?
Well, Mike, firstly, I'm not running for a position. I'm running for the job. I want to wake up every morning and go to work
morning,
on behalf
go to work
of the people
on
of the 12th
the
congressional,
the 12th
district.
Congressional district.
And I want to go to work to help build a better nation, a nation where if charity and welfare is no longer needed, a nation where if you are sick and need a medical attention, you can get it. If you're hungry, that you can get fed. If you're able-bodied and looking for a job, you can find one, and good schools will be provided for all. I want to build a better nation. So I want the job, not the position. And I think I'm uniquely qualified based on my experience as a nonprofit executive director, a corporate leader, an educator working at Johnson State
University,
a former city council member, and currently a state senator. I think I'm just uniquely qualified and better prepared and ready than any other candidate in the field.
You know, you said job and not a position because this Congress has had more days off than the chairman of any major corporation. That's why they don't get anything done. What would you do to just push it a little bit so, hey, we don't need to take off. We need to be here in Washington.
Well, certainly the majority party, which is Republican, controls the calendar in Congress. And so,
I'll
work with my party to ensure we get honest days for honest pay. But, you know, even when Congress is not in session, I'm going to be working for the people. I want to work with Secretary Donovan and HUD, Housing and Urban Development, to bring resources back to District 12. I'm going to work with Secretary Fox and Transportation to bring resources back to District 12. I'm going to work with the Commerce Department to bring back to District 12 to help small business owners grow. So even though Congress might be out of session, I will be working every day on behalf of the American people that live and work and play in North Carolina's 12th Congressional District.
Well, it's great to hear that you will be working and you won't be out there playing golf or something else, which a lot of these people do.
I don't play golf. I'm a tennis player.
So
I won't be playing tennis either. But, again, I want the job, and I think I'm uniquely qualified and prepared and ready. And with my candidacy, there is no on-the-job training.
What committees would you like to be on?
Education. Would love to be on commerce. Certainly financial services based on what's happening here in Charlotte. A new emerging issue is energy, especially here in Charlotte and in North Carolina. So I just want to, fit in where I could make a tremendous contribution. And I want my committee assignment to match my background, which is working with small business owners, working in education, and working with revitalizing neighborhoods and communities.
Okay, that's good. And what we're going to do is next Friday, I want to ask you further on that energy and that education piece. But I want to thank you for your time today. And as always, look forward to seeing you again.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Malcolm Graham, www.malcolmgrahamforcongress.com.
And what a phone number.
Just Facebook me and tweet me. Everything's right there.
Thank you, Malcolm Graham.
And it is my pleasure right now to introduce State Senator Malcolm Graham.
Good afternoon. How are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing much better than I was a day or so ago, but how are you doing? Where are you at?
I am at just leaving my campaign headquarters. We're at 301 East 9th Street, and I'm just leaving the building to make a run, and we're getting ready for a big kickoff rally tomorrow at 11 o'clock at the Neighborhood Theater, where we will officially kick off our campaign for Congress. So I'm very excited. Tomorrow's a big day for us.
Well, I will be there, and that starts at 11 o'clock, right?
11 o'clock at the Neighborhood Theater, and former school board member Arthur Griffin will be there endorsing my candidacy. Former Charlotte City Councilwoman Nancy Carter, Representative Kelly Alexander, two neighborhood leaders, Lena Pickens and Ann Williams from Hidden Valley, choirs, the Shout Band. We're going to have a lot of fun tomorrow and celebrate the fact that we live in a country where citizens get to elect their elected leaders, and what a beautiful country it is.
Well, I'm glad you say that, the citizens get to elect their leaders, but that's not happening. I mean, and what's your strategy going to be to see that citizens get to really elect by voting their leaders?
Well, first of all, it's voter education, right? Because so many new election laws have come on the book this year. We need to make sure that voters know exactly what they can do and what they can't do. So voter education is going to be a big piece of the strategy for us. No secret, everybody's doing it. Secondly, letting folks to know that when they go to the polls on May 6th, they can actually vote for Malcolm Graham twice. We believe that we are twice as nice as everybody else. And so voters can actually go to the poll and vote for me twice, one for the balance of the term in the special election and for the permanent seat, which begins January 2015. Obviously, voter registration, everybody's doing that, and then voter turnout. There's no secret to this thing. It's pretty clear what has to happen for all candidates, whether you're running for Congress or for the county commission or a state senate seat. We got to energize voters, educate voters, tell them why they need to go vote. And what happened in Raleigh the last year is not enough reason to go vote then. I'm not sure. No Medicaid expansion, unemployment insurance for those who need it taken away. Teachers got shortchanged in terms of teacher tenure and teacher pay. Tax reform disguised as a tax cut, and it was a tax cut for the rich at the expense of the poor. I can go on and on. Women's right to choose, voter suppression laws. If you don't have a reason to get up from your assets and vote, then shame on you.
Well, you know, the thing is that this is very strange, this this 12th district vote, because my understanding was that the governor, Art Pope, didn't want to have a special election for the seat. So how do you say, you're saying vote twice. What do you mean? I shouldn't have said Art Pope. I really meant McCrory. But we know Pope's the governor. So go ahead. Hello? Did I lose you? We lost you. Oh, right at my important pun. Right there. I was
that
just making it. Yeah, I was just
especially
making
it. When you bring in the Pope, you know.
Hey, what happened? So we got to kill him. You got to call us back here. Cause we
that's
lost
all right.
Him. But
but anyway, so
right
what he's
here.
Saying
that
is absolutely important. But this year, there's a lot of changes because we have the 1860 party in,
mm-hmm.
and we need everybody to get out and vote. He was absolutely right. Get up and get out to vote, because if you don't, there really won't be much to vote for anymore. You may not even be able to vote anymore, because one of the things that he said that I like is, and that you said, is ensuring the right of people to vote.
Well,
because what these groups like the Koch brothers were talking about want to do is ensure the right of corporations to buy elections.
Right,
we
right,
want
right.
people to vote.
There's
a difference.
Yeah. Ain't that the truth about people
voting? I mean, people are sometimes fooled by it when they have pretty names like, you know, Prosperity for America or whatever. But it is absolutely the antithesis of democracy because they're taking your vote away.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when they tell you that
Well, the thing is, you see how they –
there's no special days and there's no special times and no special place and then bring 18 forms of ID and everything. You know, you just stay home.
Well, you see, the aggressive party here, they were not going to have a special election. Because, you see, the seat is vacant now, so nobody has representation to the U.S. government from that district.
Which is illegal.
Unless you're making the laws.
Yeah.
But this is a federal election. So I don't see how the governor...
That's probably why. I don't understand why I'm saying it. But what they probably want to do is have no replacement. And then they were told they cannot not have a replacement. So
well,
they probably are having this dual election now for the replacement and the permanent seat so that they can get around that issue.
Okay, I see you. We're back on with Malcolm. Okay, let's see.
Are you back?
Who paid the price?
Must have been
who paid the price?
I mentioned his name. And we were cut off.
Well.
So I was in the middle of asking you to explain to us this strange storyline here where you got to be voted on twice. And why, because I understand the situation is that McCrory did not want to have an election. We were going to go vacant with no representation here in District 12.
Well, certainly it's up to the governor to decide the schedule for the special election. And in his wisdom, he decided to make it concurrent with the regular election schedule, which means really the seat will be vacant. Almost a year, not quite, but long enough where citizens of the 12th Congressional District will be without representation. And so there's two elections, one for the balance of Congressman Watt's former term, which would be probably at this point now about 4 or 5 weeks based on the election schedule. So I'll be on the ballot for that. And then I'll be on the ballot for the term that begins January 2015. So literally
when you go to the poll in May, you can vote for Malcolm Graham for Congress twice, once for the special election and the other for the permanent seat. And like I said earlier, we're twice as nice.
Let me, wait.
Is this like a hanging chad?
let me explain something real quick. It's not you can, you must, because the problem with that is, which is probably what they are very well aware of, if you voted, like say you're not paying attention and you vote for Malcolm for the 4 weeks and you don't click the other one, you don't get a vote for the whole next term.
Exactly. So voter education is going to be significantly important along with the new voting laws that's taking place as well.
Well, that's just like saying, James Bond, I want my martini shaken, not stirred. Well, why? I want mine stirred. I mean, this is completely ludicrous. How many people, how can we get the people who didn't come out and vote in 2010 to understand that they need to vote for you twice? I mean, this is in short length of time.
Well, the first thing you have to do is get them to the polls, right? I mean, so you got to get them there to vote. And again, as I said earlier, with all the bad legislation coming out of Raleigh the past year, it is incumbent of every teacher, every woman, every voter. They have offended every interest group out there. So there should be people waiting in miles to vote this year. And then once we get them to the poll, again, literally tell them, make sure you vote for Malcolm Graham for Congress twice, for the special election and the permanent seat. They must do that.
But you see, that's the old joke that they used to say in Chicago. Oh, yeah, you can vote for me twice for governor.
Yeah.
I mean, people say, what do you mean? Oh, he's kidding.
Yeah.
You know, so the thing is that
it sows confusion. It sounds weird. Yeah. It just, again, this is another way to confuse and skew elections. How are you,
and I think this is a very, very, very important point. How are you going to make sure that people understand there are two different elections on the same ballot?
Well, you know, we got to protect some trade secrets here, right? You know, because we don't want to give everything away. But
You are going to do that.
Like I said earlier, very general today because, you know, this trade secret, voter education and turnout is going to be extremely important. We understand it. It's no secret to the other candidates understand or they should. And so we're going to do what we have to do to make sure that we get our voters to the polls and that they vote for Malcolm Graham for Congress twice.
Okay. I don't want to talk no more about trade secrets here, but one of your things was election education. Now, one of the things that this regressive party, not only in the state, our Pope and the rest of the country wants to do, is to make sure that our young men and women who are growing up from pre-K to the 12th grade think that they do not have to vote. They take it out of the curriculum. They don't. You know, when I went to school, we had 2 weeks on voting. I mean, I went to school in Brooklyn, New York, but we had 2 weeks of just learning how to vote. We had a voting machine, a facsimile in our history classroom. History classroom. Mm-hmm. And they showed us. You go in there, you pull the curtain, and you vote for the person you want, and you pull the lever. We had one of them old machines back then. But so the thing is that
because it was right after the
Civil War. Right. So the thing is that that's not taught in school anymore, and it's not taught how important we are where we are in this state after 125 years of good representation, of having the best schools in the entire country. Now we are lower than Mississippi in education.
That's pretty low.
Yeah, listen, you know, Mike, that's a good topic, and I work at Johnson C. Smith University. My kids are in public institutions, college at level. Obviously, I've already went through elementary, middle, and high school with them. And public education is so important for so many people throughout this country. And what we did last year in Raleigh relating to how we treated teachers or teacher tenure, teacher pay increases, no enhanced payment for advanced degrees, no wraparound services, literally, in terms of school nurses and school guiding counselors. We got to do a better job in terms of treating our teachers and getting our public education back on solid footing. And so that's what we got to do.
How are we going to do this? And you're going in, as I said in when we had the interview on Saturday, you're going into the lion's den without any weapons, with God's prayer on your shoulder, talking to moo-moos who don't care if just like what happened 2010 in this state.
Yeah.
We had a 10% turnout, 12%.
Well, you got to be an honest broker, and I've worked and have a reputation as being a bridge builder. So I want to go to Congress and the honest broker, a bridge builder, call them out when they need to be called out, work with them where you can. To make small advances, and hopefully the Democratic Party will regain the majority in the House so we can start passing smart, progressive legislation.
Well, you know that the part of the reason why a two-party system works better than a third party or a fourth party is because the more people you have to talk to, the less they talk. You have two-party, hey, if you want something to get done, both sides have to give. Yes, I know. And sometimes they say, well, I don't want to give. This is the most important thing to me. Well, you know, then if that's the most important thing to you, then something else you have to give. You can't do anything if both. But these people, it's like a curse if you give in.
Yeah.
I mean, and I don't think you're on the state senate here, so I guess you did meet some people like this.
Yeah.
But, so because of your experience in the state senate of North Carolina, you have dealt with moo-moos before. So I guess you might have a better chance.
Well, you know, I dealt with people that wanted to take the Charlotte Douglas International Airport for no reason at all, trying to do voter suppression because trying to get a political advantage. Trying to do in women in terms of women right to choose and those type of issues. So, yes, I've seen them up close and personal. But, you know, at the end of the day, you still got to find a way to get your pinky toe in the room to, you know, even I tell people before, sometimes you got to be at the table just to make sure that terrible, bad legislation doesn't become terrible legislation. And so you got to sit there and sometimes hold your nose and just kind of be that honest broker in the room when there's so much dishonesty around you. But you got to let them know that somebody's watching, someone's paying attention, and try to, at least try to find one or two that may have a conscience that willing to do what's in the best interest of people versus party and make legislation that you know that's going to pass at least somewhat bearable if that's a thing that you can do at all. But not to engage them at all means that they can do anything they want to do, and which they're currently doing. And when you think things can get any worse, they probably can.
Yeah. Well, I want you to listen to this short scenario for 1 minute.
I got to bug out right now. I hate to do it to you, but I got to go. Again, want to thank you for always being with me, and I'll be back next week.
I'll be back next week, and I will see you on Saturday.
I'll see you tomorrow. See you, man. All right, bye-bye.
Good. Bye-bye. Malcolm Graham, state senator.
One thing that I hope he does is carry a calendar that has the date, especially the year, like 2014, for instance, in large print, because the repressive party needs to remember it ain't 1864, and that's what they keep trying. And I would love a little reality check with these people, because just wishing they could turn back the clock, you know, he was talking about passing laws, they just want passed laws,
right,
you know, from the past. And I'm you can't. We're going forward as a nation, not backwards.
Yeah.
And they can't have a time machine. I'm sorry, it doesn't work that way. The
time
country,
machine.
You know, time goes forward.
Well,
so.
This is what the father of the Conservative Party said.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Well,
that's everything you need to know.
I mean, is
I like how he says, you know, all those good Christians.
Right.
You know, what do you got, goo-goo syndrome? You want to do good by this country?
Right.
We don't want to do good. We want to destroy this country.
I mean, it is just a major. That is Paul Weinrich, who is the father of the conservative right-wing movement and co-founder of the Heritage Foundation.
Yeah, that should tell you everything. And there's, again, those names, Heritage. Everybody has Heritage. It sounds good and benign. But listen to what they're saying. Literally, I don't want people to vote. I don't want you to have rights. I don't want you to have prosperity. I don't want you to have anything. It's all for me.
All for me.
That's all they're saying.
Yeah, well,
you know,
I don't want everyone to vote.
He's chastising good Christians because you want everybody
can you imagine,
that? I mean,
the goo-goo syndrome.
Right. So can you imagine? This is a group of people. They are chastising people for being good and for wanting equal rights for people. To want everybody to have the same thing and the same rights and the same vote. I don't want that. I want to take that from them. You know, I mean, it's listen to what the people say. It's pretty obvious. I don't know why people get, you know, buffaloed by it just because you got a flag bumper sticker.
Yeah,
flag
bumper sticker with a rifle in the window.
Well, yeah, but
with
a rifle in the window. The billionaire brothers we've been talking about, like them, just because you say Americans for Prosperity on your bumper sticker doesn't mean that the agenda isn't to destroy America. I mean, when you say, I don't want an American government, I don't want a federal government, I want it all dissolved back down to states' rights, that's not Americans for Prosperity. I'm sorry. That's anti-American.
For
lack of
millionaires for prosperity to be billionaires.
No, I'm totally astounded.
Totally astounded
that people don't just call it. It is traitorous rhetoric. It is literally anti everything America stands for. They are calling for the destruction of the government. They're calling for the destruction of law. They're calling for the
to impeach the SOB.
No, I think it was actually what was said earlier. Remember, the guy said, let's execute it.
Oh, yeah.
That's really right. Failing that.
As a enemy combatant, she said.
Because, you know, that always sounds good. She learned that all.
Now, I wonder, is that crossing over the line?
I mean,
is that crossing over the line of that the Secret Service would say is, you know?
The thing is, I think it is, but the thing is, they have so ratcheted up the rhetoric on the right. I mean, it's nonstop over there with all these, you know, he's a Kenyan terrorist, communist, fascist, Al-Qaeda agent that was implanted before Al-Qaeda was even created in the womb by the Kenyan terrorist network, and they brilliantly then took over the White House. You know, the lunacy is so palpable, but they keep it up, and I'm afraid. I mean, that's why we see – I mean, you remember, Becca, just the last election or so, they had those guys march around with M-16s and AK-47s and all that, saying, take my gun from me. And they were strapped to their leg. We're going to go to the protest, you know, walk around with our gun, you know. It's going to end up in violence if they don't stop the insanity. And that's the sad truth, because you know what happens when you ratchet it up. It's just like in the abortion debate. They ratcheted it up so much that nurses and doctors became murderers of children and butchers and all that. You remember? But guess what they started doing? They started killing them all. They would go to their houses. They would shoot them in their cars. They would blow up clinics. And they'd also, you know, oh, by the way, kill women and children and everybody else.
No,
there.
They wouldn't do that, would
they? They didn't care because the lunatics come out. And as long as we have people like, you know, our favorite screecher, Ted Nugent, running around saying, I'm going to shoot him, you know, and if you remember last time, I'll either leave the country or be in prison.
Right.
You know, yeah, well, he's still, you know, hanging out on TV and everywhere.
On Fox.
But, it's this insane.
Hanging
rhetoric.
Out on Fox.
It's, we've got to kill him. And that's why, unfortunately, some little old ladies that, you know, listen to this all day long, every day, year after year after year, end up saying, let's impeach the SOB or what, you know. It seeps into the, it's like acid. It just erodes.
Speaking about that, Bruno.
Isn't it ironic that the guys who always talk about killing and shooting and chopping heads
never
off
been in the military?
Well, yeah, hey, they've never been in the military. But all the
didn't
guys
have the
do,
cojones.
They're the ones that are always saying that everybody's trying to take guns away from somebody. But, excuse me, you're the only ones with weapons. I mean, what are y'all talking about? Nobody's trying to take Jack, but you're trying to kill everybody.
I mean, it's,
you know. But again, you were talking about rhetoric. You know, where does chopping their heads off? Even how's that even?
You know,
how's that even allowed?
Why don't you just say both? You know, see, the reason why they say that is because they don't have many people to vote.
Right.
They have to either get them to voting or chop their heads off.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only, and that's why what Paul Weinrich says. We don't want everybody to vote.
Right.
If they're going to vote, kill them. Chop their heads off.
Mm-hmm.
You notice he's very careful. He didn't say kill them. Because I think if he said kill them, that might have been one of the words that went over the limit.
Mm-hmm.
He said chop their heads off.
And also he said I'll either be dead as in I was killed in the attempt,
well,
or I'll be in prison
right.
if I succeeded.
Right.
You
right.
see, he didn't say kill, but he said, why would you be dead or in prison? Because you did something heinous, I presume, you know.
Well, you know, it's so.
But again, it's that endless. Let's ratchet it up. Let's increase the pressure. Let's say insane stuff.
You know,
and then sooner or later, somebody insane does snap.
Sooner or later.
I'm guaranteeing. I've been hearing, all my little Republican friends saying, you know, that he's gonna get his. You just wait. You just wait. He's going to get it. So these guys, they've been begging, you know, for somebody to assassinate him. They would love for some of that bag to come out.
Oh, man. Yeah, but wait a minute. I don't think so. Because I just definitely don't think they want to deal with Biden for another 3 years. I don't think so. Biden don't hold his teeth.
No.
And he ain't going to go for that.
No.
Barack Obama, the first black president, has to be seen like a thug. Even though the Bill O'Reillys, the Sean Hannitys, the Rush Limbaughs, the Ann Coulters, all use that terminology.
Oh, yeah.
They talk about someone else, and they say, you know, and like the president. So
right.
They try to link them together.
Oh, no, and that's why, I mean, and we've seen the more extreme, every rally, everything else, or somebody shows up with him in some, you know, horrible thing, the witch doctor outfit or something, that they try to completely destroy his character and slur him. But they also like that demon there, so they don't want to remove him. They just leave him there so they can say horrible things about him all day long. You've got to wonder about the mentality of people who live in hatred and fear. And that's one of the things that cracks me up the most, Mike, about these guys. You know, for all their guns and I'm going to ride into battle and chop their heads off and all this other rhetoric that they have, they seem to be scared to death all the time. They can't handle, you know, oh, my God, there's a black man in the White House, you know. What are they scared of? That's what I can't understand. Why are they quaking in their boots? Now they might be saying they're white sheets, Mike. I mean,
now see the thing is that they have talked about the black man being in the White House so long that because they never thought it would come true, and now that it's a fact, and that he was voted in twice. What's the story here?
Yeah.
There's a major problem. And see, this all comes back in the 1880s when we had people who were African-American who were congressmen.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, no, these guys are intelligent. We've got to pass some literacy laws here so the rest of them can't get in.
It's like, hey, Mike, you never know. I mean, the scary thing about black people is if you give them a chance, you give them an education, let them have a job, let them get into power somewhere else, they might do something nice.
Well, you know,
like what's that guy that invented peanut butter? Oh, my God. We don't want any scientists coming out of y'all.
No, no scientists.
Good
Lord. Enough we got
the
congressional district. Well, hey, the thing is, they don't want anybody with any information other than their information.
Well, that's what, you know, little boy said, I don't want anybody to vote. Minorities only, as in my minority.
That's right. I mean, you know, then you have the historically impressive and brilliant Louis Jones.
It provides in Obamacare that this commissioned and non-commissioned officer corps will be trained, but I want to know, are they using weapons to train, or are they being taught to use syringes and health care items?
Army nurse is going to come at me with syringes.
You know, and the thing that's so bad about him, you ever see how, now if he isn't the perfect picture of Gomer Pyle, but the problem is Gomer Pyle was smart compared to this guy.
Yeah.
He looks like Gomer Pyle, and this guy speaks like Gomer Pyle, but he's not as smart as Gomer Pyle.
I love it. See, and that's why I like our president. You know, the president had the talk about cojones to go sit in front of Bill O the other day, right during the Super Bowl, as a matter of fact, and listen to Bill O just pontificate and insult him for an hour. And I was impressed because he didn't, like, you know, put a foot right through his face. But, hey, you know, that's what I would have. I wouldn't have been sitting there listening to that crap. But one thing I loved, he said, was when O'Reilly says, you know, you don't want the world to think, and that's what they'll believe. You know. And he said, no, this is our president said, they believe it because folks like you are telling them that. And these kinds of things keep on surfacing in part because of your TV station and you promote them.
Right.
And that was... I just love that.
So what else could O'Reilly say?
No, but that's just, it's the truth.
But here's the thing, so impossible. He only had 10 minutes with the president. And all he talked about was Benghazi, the IRS. Mm-hmm. I mean.
Well, here's the thing.
Give me a break. That's all we've been done with.
Oh, well, here's the thing. Benghazi is their only even hint of a snafu that this president...
Well, you see, but you hit the problem, though.
No,
the president and the CIA can't come out and give the information
that
it was really a CIA spy base.
No, we've talked about it 100 times. And there's something he did. You know, it wasn't like he told all the Marines not to have bullets and send them into Beirut or something. I mean,
no,
like
he would do that.
So it wasn't something direct he did.
He had somebody to do that.
But they're saying that, you know, he somehow covered up, you know, because they didn't send enough protection for all these people, whatever. Even though the Republicans are the ones who would cut all the funding for the embassies worldwide. But that's, you know, let's forget that. Anyway, besides all that, it's the only hint of scandal of any kind that they can even bring up and be legit. Because their usual stuff has been like, You weren't really born here. Were you?
I want to apologize for my graphic remarks this morning.
And the other thing is, the reason he talks about what he talks about is because there are two things that the Republicans do. A, they can't stand, you know, the president.
Mm-hmm.
But they have to attack him legitimately and illegitimately, you know. And, like, the Benghazi is kind of the legitimate attack. Or the IRS thing, that is kind of like just the boogeyman that you can just say about anybody because everybody hates taxes. You know, that's like death. You and the IRS,
yes.
There's no defense possible for Obama. That's just like saying, you know, you haven't cured your health care plan hasn't cured death in America. You know, there's no way you can say, well, I'm working on it. You know, and to say that, like, oh, you're doing something with taxes, or your IRS is doing something, or you're investigating people, or you're not investigating people, or you're collecting more, you're not collecting more, your taxes are going up or not going. That's all it's a straw man argument. It doesn't have anything to do with the president. The president isn't the, you know.
You don't write any bills.
Yeah, they've been tax collecting. Go read the Bible. You know, everybody's been tax collecting. And, I mean, you know, it's been around for a little while.
It's like the president said, he called, when this fool O'Reilly, mm-hmm. was asking he asked the president about this. He says, tell us. He said, now, your detractors believe that you did not tell the world it was a terrorist attack. So then he went switched right over from there, and he says, about the IRS, mm-hmm. O'Reilly said, why did the head of the IRS, Doug Shulman, visit the White House over 157 times? And this is what everybody wants to know.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's like the head of the IRS, when he goes to the White House, the only person he can see there, because it's only one room place,
mm-hmm.
the only one he can see is the dogs, the first lady, if she's there, not out shopping at Food Lion, the grandma, if she's not knitting in the corner.
And the Marine at the door. Yep, don't forget him.
Oh, the Marine at the door, who's eating sushi.
Well, here's the thing about
and
that.
The president.
Again, faux news, faux scandals. They bring that thing up, and they love to throw around 157, as it was explained on TV, and people, you know. But, again, when they make an accusation, you have to go in and then clear it with facts, and it, you know, cover it up. Hey, what happened? What was that? What was he talking about? But the 157 times, to begin with, was an auto clearance. That was – they put his name on a list of people
right.
who can attend all meetings.
Right.
So he's on the 157 list.
Oh, but no. Well, we don't want the information. We just want – we saw the list. That's it.
Actual attendance, he attended 17 meetings of the whole year. And he never even met with Obama or anybody in the administration. He met with his regular secretaries and people in work or whatever, like they usually do. And so what they do is create a faux controversy. The guy was never there 157 times.
Well,
again,
that's because
again,
the boomers that listen to Fox.
Of course. And the thing is, you put the president in the position of defending taxes. That's like saying, you know, why do you kill babies, Mr. President? You know, or whatever. Well, I don't really kill them. I kind of pat them a little bit. And then, wait, why are you saying kill? Wait, I can't answer this. You know, everything sounds bad.
I kill before they're born because I give their mother prescription drugs to
like,
kill them.
Why are you allowing the IRS to tax Americans? You know, it's just a stupid statement, and it just sounds bad because it's taxes.
No, here's the thing. I don't understand it. If they don't want the IRS to tax, the Congress makes the laws, kill the law.
Exactly. Again, that's another.
The president can't do nothing. He can't tell.
Yes.
He can't tell the Shulman, hey, I want you to raise the taxes on everybody in the country by 100%. He can't do that.
No, he can't do anything. And that's.
I want you to raise the taxes on gasoline.
He
can't do that.
It's another faux argument. It's bull. But they say it because he is then put in position of trying to defend the IRS, and it just. You know, everybody hates the IRS. Ew. You know, taxes. Ew. But again, it's one of these faux things. So you had meetings about taxes? You know. And then he has to go, well, yeah, I'm president. I have had meetings about taxes. You know, I've also had meetings about my dog and about meeting people from other countries. It's crazy. No, but, I mean, this is what Fox does. They gin up their little bitty, small-minded population
now,
with crazy talk.
Right.
And taxes.
Crazy talk in taxes. And we sat through it, we saw it, and I have not seen the American version of House of Cards. I have seen
the British
version, which I think is, I think is just fabulous. And it really has to go something to beat that. But, yeah, you know, I'd love to watch it because I love Kevin Spacey. Mm-hmm. But I just don't think it can beat the actual first House of Cards.
No.
See, that's like, I don't think they get, when they made the film, with Henry Fonda, with the trial, where is my movie? I haven't seen him on here. With the trial, 12 Angry Men. They remade it later years in color or whatnot. It was horrible.
Right. You can't recreate a masterpiece. You know,
can't
you can try to repaint the Mona Lisa and recarve the Statue of David, but it just ain't the same.
It is not the same.
And I think it would lose something, me personally, because we saw the original British one. I think it's going to lose.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you saw the original Mona Lisa.
Oh, I did actually. But that was in Paris when I was there. But, no, but I think the original,
you're a
like
world
House
traveler?
Cards,
you must be a communist.
Well, the House of Cards, I think, is going to suffer. Come on, just in translation, because the original, of course, was with, you know, you had, it's a whole different connotation over there with the House of Lords.
Absolutely.
House of Commons.
Because you can't have the same power.
Right.
As the assistant to the prime minister has over there.
Right. And
because
it's
a parliamentary system.
Yeah.
And see, we don't have the real aristocracy. That's
and the
right.
real things that are
right.
happening there. And that's what I think over here, it's going to be interesting political machination,
right.
but it's going to be your typical political stuff. Not,
right.
Not all those levels of and there's a whole culture there of, you know, aristocracy.
And they believe in it.
Yes. No, it's tradition.
They believe in it. It's not like the Koch brothers that think they are they're aristocracy.
Well,
they think they are the prince and princesses. They probably are the prince and princesses.
That could be a great
new
one.
Yeah.
Americans for Aristocracy.
Well,
the new nonprofit.
No, but they don't have to say it. just like saying.
They just pronounce aristocracy.
I'm the greatest.
Like
but what do you say it for? Well, that's right. But see, now, here's another thing here.
Hey, by the way, on that, I forgot this earlier, but I had this note. Yes. There was a protester out in the Capitol there with fighting against Governor Walker and the Koch brothers.
No.
And
what
happened
there? Where is he now?
Well, no, these protesters were all out there. But this one protester, I love it. He said, Governor Walker, you have to kick the Koch habit. That was his sign as he was picketing around, walking around and all that.
So Walker's on drugs?
And I thought, what a funny thing to do, you know, kick the Koch habit. But I think
it's the same thing.
Even I think it works in the original pronunciation the way I have it.
Ooh.
You got to kick the...
Oh, yeah. Well, that's true, too. But
because, you know, I think Governor Walker is addicted to Coke.
Oh,
you got to watch.
Well,
you got to watch how much money
you take. How can we work that with the Macquarie Pope? Yeah, because...
Hey, I think, actually, that's the kind of...
Macquarie,
you have
to,
I just like, you
have to kick the Pope, and we don't mean Francis.
Name.
You got to kick the Pope, and we don't mean Francis?
Hey, they might actually want to kick Francis. You remember,
they
were mad they
were
at
mad
Francis.
Him.
Woo!
They were mad at Francis.
When he dared say, have compassion and help the poor... And be like Jesus? Oh, I've never seen anybody get so mad. Man,
I am going
Republicans
to be,
like to flip out on that.
Speaking about that, I'm going to be speaking to Father Moe, who is in
charge. I thought you were going to say the Pope. I was excited there.
No, the in charge of the diocese here in Charlotte, North Carolina.
He's a pretty cool little guy.
Right. And little guy, he's a big guy.
Yeah, he's big.
Big. But anyway, I want to... make sure that we get A matter of fact, let me finish this first. I want to make sure that we get the...
You're just talking.
All the people involved. I'm going to get Occupy Charlotte.
Okay.
I'm going to get Mr. Rodriguez, who's instrumental in starting that. I'm going to be speaking to him in the next week or so. I'm going to get him on the show and tell us what they are doing in Wisconsin. These Koch brothers, Prince and Princess, they have now spent over $27 million races.
In one day.
And we're not even at the start of the election period yet.
Yep. And that should tell you something, people. All I've got to say, honestly, Wake, these people are buying your country out from under you. And you think that $27 million before it's even time to talk about the election doesn't have impact? It does. And that's why we're seeing the things we're seeing across the country, like no unions and don't pay teachers and, let's not vote on off days.
Well, and here's a thought for you from the skinny witch herself.
If amnesty goes through, it's over. You have 11 million instantly legalized. They are allowed to let in all of their distant family members under chain migration. We are talking about another 30 million unskilled immigrants, which is what they are. They're muppets. I don't know what Rand Paul thinks he's talking about. It will bankrupt the country. Moreover, contrary to what your friend Karl Rove says, Hispanics are not natural Republicans. This will be a disaster for the Republican Party, which will never win another national election. Thank you, Marco Rubio.
The white witch. Boy, she really likes to lay it on there, doesn't she?
I mean,
it's going to destroy America. One immigrant gets in, Mike.
Here's what else she said.
Well, I'll put it in a nutshell. If we don't run Chris Christie, Romney will be the nominee on the list. Romney, of the four remaining, is the most conservative. He has the strongest position on illegal immigration. Even CPAC had to cut back on its speakers this year by about 300 pounds. I'm now a single-issue voter against amnesty. The Christie's off my list.
Now, she did say, and I didn't get it, but she did say, I was wrong about the 300 pounds. I'm glad we didn't nominate him.
Coulter's has a tongue. You gotta wonder, are all these clips?
Well, you heard about all the book sales that she does, right? First of all, here's how it works. All the conservative churches that are part of this conservative cabal go and get the people in their churches to submit a form where they buy her books. Mm-hmm. The churches all get together in their conservative cabal and go to the company that's producing the book,
mm-hmm.
and they buy up the book before it comes out.
Yes.
And then they sell it back to the parishioners. So, but they keep buying the books. So you go to some of these other Christian cabal houses, and she might have 8 books from Ann Coulter,
mm-hmm.
because they have to buy them.
Well, and there's also this. And this is something that's been going on for a long time. It's called gaming the system. They mm-hmm. they do it. One of the first groups that actually did it was L. Ron Hubbard's followers. When Dianetics first came out, Scientologists were required, to buy it. But not just the, you have to buy it like you would, a Bible or something like that. But what the church as a whole did back then, they would buy the entire bulk of the print run, return it, rebuy it. So it...
Return it and rebuy it.
Yeah, but it drives up sales. So it makes it into instant bestsellers. Because you see print runs are going up, it's already in second printing, third printing, whatever. And you see this rolling tide.
Okay, but what happens when the book goes back to the company? They buy it, so they just throw it away.
Yeah, well, no, they rebuy it, so that it keeps going cycling. It looks like it's always...
So wait a minute, so people are buying used books? So they really don't have to make any books?
Well, yeah.
So they say, oh, we get you a used book,
though. And
then
what they do with the Republicans, all these groups are required to read all these books. And all these churches are required to read all these books, and all these people. So
but
do
they read them, or are they required just to buy them?
Just buy them.
Because I'm sure
the price of membership in hell. But no, you just anyway. It games the whole system where it sounds like everything's booming and it's a huge bestseller. But if you go and look after about a month at any of these bookstores, for instance, all those printed copies of it have been returned. And they're all in the bargain bin for like a dollar.
Because they're all used books.
Because nobody can buy them. Well, nobody wants them. And they can't sell them. So what happens is it's just a blip, you know, and it's a faux seller. But that's what they live for. It's the illusion.
Well, after buying these books like they do, are these people brain dead? That they keep buying them and buying them?
Apparently. It's called being a follower. No. Go back and look into history.
In history.
If you look in World War II, prior to that, when Hitler became the chancellor for, you know, the Republic, and he was the fascist member, the leader of the party, you know what they do with Mein Kampf?
Yeah.
Made it required...
Reading.
Well, it wasn't just reading. You had to buy one. Everybody had to. See, you got to remember, the fascists are the corporate party. They believe in corporation as all-powerful state. They are a business party. So every member of the party was required to buy a copy of Mein Kampf and keep it on his person or be punished. You had to have it as part of your membership. That's it. Yeah, you had your little pocket carry. Just like, you know, later you had things like, you know, people used to make fun of Mao's little red book. You know,
Yeah.
Well, Hitler's the one who invented that.
Oh.
But what he did was everybody had a copy of Mein Kampf to carry around so that you showed you were loyal. You were a member, right? But the side effect of that is it made him a multimillionaire because every member bought his book. And that's what they do in the first year. You buy the book. By the way, it doesn't matter if you read it. You get a shit. You know, throw it in the garbage. But it makes the apparatus money. So it funds Fox News. It funds all these little conservative groups. You know, and look at all the churches. They do the same thing. They fund each other. They give to each other. They promote each other. If you look at the whole little group, they endlessly promote each other. It's like a little circle. And they all buy each other's products. And it keeps everybody making money.
Well,
which is the point?
Well,
this
clown Jones on here, he's another moron. Edward has him on his show.
Studio, watching the news.
I'm just beside myself that he would even have that moron on his show for any reason. But I think he's talking about because Ed is for the. The pipeline.
I know. He's coming out for that now. I'm pretty upset with that.
Yeah, you know.
But what that is unfortunately, I think, is the companies and everything, they've wanted this. They're going to push it. And the president and Congress know it. And now they're trying to get the regular people to fall in with it because it's going to go through. And that's what... He's doing. He's doing the, you know, PR out front, unfortunately. But I think it's just atrocious because the whole point of it is, again, it's no fuel for us. It's nothing for America at all. What we're doing is extracting all of it and taking it into the pipeline they're building. It's to the port of the audience so that we can ship it out.
Yeah, well, and that's the problem I
because
have.
We're selling it. Worldwide, we're not. It's nothing for Americans to consume or use. It's to take and sell on the open markets because we can get money, and that makes billions for these companies.
Well, and this is the problem that I have. There is a a short, and I was looking for in here that I had a report from, I was going to talk about, which is a little off the subject here, but Bill Nye and his, I recorded the whole,
talking at the Creation Museum.
With that, with the Creation Museum.
Yeah, with
Ken
Ham.
And
yeah,
he, Bill Nye ripped him apart.
Yeah.
I mean,
here's the thing about that.
Yes.
I agree, but I also think it's just a very easy thing to do because they're just so ludicrous. I mean, did you see that the other day? Even Pat Robertson.
Pat Robertson came out
against
Ham
and said Ham was an idiot because he's fame of the world.
He said, we have to...
So
come up with a reasonable approach to this.
Well,
he said we have to come up with a reasonable approach to this.
Yeah.
And because every time Bill Nye would ask him, well, he said, because the question, I think it came out of the studio audience, and studio audience said to both of them, if you, and he talked to Ken Ham, if you were, well, no, first of all, he went to Bill Nye, and the question said, if you were shown that creationism was definitely possible and that you may not be right about this, would you agree to it? And he said, yes. He said, I just have one thing. Have a creationist tell me one thing that could be, that is shown a prediction.
Mm-hmm.
Everything they say to us has already happened, and anybody could say, you see what happened.
Right.
Show us something that you say is going to happen.
Right.
Definitely. Says, I can show you something that is definitely going to happen with this planet, because we look back and see how the planet has performed and evolved.
Right.
But you don't believe in evolution.
Right.
So they asked the same question to Ken Ham. And Ken Ham said, no.
Right. So if you're giving proof, it's not we believe.
Because
they're not.
I get all my information from the book, the Bible.
Hmm.
And if it's not in the Bible, it ain't going to happen. So, I mean, no matter how much you want to help them,
no matter
how much you want to say, look, hey, you know, it's what was I'm trying to think?
Look, I've told you this before, but my friend from Mississippi, the evangelical friend that I had that night, he said that he rejected everything I was saying when I was talking to him one time. We were talking about science and stuff. And he said, hey, dude, you can have your facts. I got mine. And that's the way, you know, it's as if they're, you know, two separate things. But their faith is such that they don't believe anything.
But see, here's the problem. I was having a talk with Father Carl about the same thing before I went over there, because I'm going to talk about before we go up there about a new show that I have that's going to be on faith and ministries and community. And I said, Father Carl, did you hear? He said, well, no. I said, look, I'm going to send you a copy of it. I have it on my, and I thought I had it on my desktop, but hey, I can't find it. I don't know where it's at. Oh, I know where it's at. You see, that's the problem. I know where it's at.
Just say this, though, about that debate in general. This was my argument about it. Just like you were talking about the XL guy, Schweitzer or whatever that's on there, that you couldn't believe he had him on there. I was upset at Bill Nye. I don't think that he would risk losing or anything like that.
No, there was no shot of him losing.
No, it was like shooting fish in, you know, a barrel. But I didn't worry about that. I was upset that he even gave the guy a stage.
Yeah.
Because if you give every lunatic, you know, equal footing, then it gives legitimacy to somebody. Somebody says, oh, then it's equal.
Well,
and that was the thing that made me so mad. I'm just like, why even do this? Because basically it's a PR stunt.
Of course.
Just to say, see what I told you? The guy's a fool. And to me, that's just, A, it's kind of demeaning and insulting. And then, B, it legitimizes the crazy.
Yes.
And that made me mad. So that was
I want to play this short little thing. This is what Bill Nye talking I don't know if he's talking to Kim Hann about the creationism, but just listen to him.
Denial of evolution is unique in the United States. We are the world's most advanced technological. So, I mean, you could say Japan. But generally, the United States is where most of the innovation still happens. People still move to the United States. And that's largely because of the intellectual capital we have, the general understanding of science. When you have a portion of the population that doesn't believe it, it holds everybody back. Evolution is the fundamental idea in all of life science and all of biology. It's very much analogous to trying to do geology without believing in tectonic plates. You're just not going to get the right answer. Your whole world is just going to be a mystery instead of an exciting place. As my old professor Carl Sagan said, when you're in love, you want to tell the world. So once in a while I get people that claim they don't believe in evolution. And my response generally is, why not? Really, why not? Your world just becomes fantastically complicated when you don't believe in evolution. I mean, here are these ancient dinosaur bones or fossils. Here is radioactivity. Here are distant stars that are just like our star, but that are a different point in their life cycle. The idea of deep time of this billions of years explains so much of the world around us. If you try to ignore that, your worldview just becomes crazy. It's just untenable, self-inconsistent. And I say to the grown-ups, if you want to deny evolution and live in your world that's completely inconsistent with everything we observe in the universe, that's fine. But don't make your kids do it, because we need them. We need scientifically literate voters and taxpayers for the future. We need people that can, we need engineers that can build stuff.
The Burger King rich sandwich can't get better, but it can.
It's a really hard thing. In a couple centuries, that will be two for five dollars. It just won't exist. I mean, it's there's no evidence for it, so.
No, that was it. What do you think about that?
I really like Bill Nye. He's great, and I think he's a great ambassador of science for children. You know, he does a great job introducing concepts in easy ways and fun ways. And I just love the whole science guy concept. It's kind of like the Kratz brothers, you know, when they introduce animals to children, mm-hmm. and you just go, oh, look, Zaboomafoo, that's so funny, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's cute and it's sweet and nice and all that. But again, you should never have debated this guy, because you can't argue with stupid, and you're wasting your time, because the guy isn't listening. And I thought it was kind of telling. There was a moment after the introductions, when they gave their whole little speeches and all this, mm-hmm. where the two of them said two separate things. Bill Nye, being civil and nice, said, I think I really learned something from you, you know, Mr. Hann.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're going to understand each other. You know? And Hann said, when I asked, you learn anything about evolution or anything else on it? He said, there's nothing to learn. And his exact quote was, this is only a battle that's really about authority. That's what his statement was. Now, that is it. That's distilled. It's not the facts. It's not learning. It's not finding that you're wrong and that you've been proven, you know, to think otherwise and you've improved yourself or anything else. No, it's about authority and control. And just that to me was so telling. It's just like, you know.
The thing is, and I was going to play a short version of that, but I don't think we're going to have time. I don't want to start anything that I can't finish.
Midway through evolution.
Yeah, because my wife told me that one time. Don't start nothing you can't finish.
Okay.
Don't say it so loud. Now I just said it on TV, on radio. Anyway, the thing is that we understand. Bill Nye Is this the right one again? No, that's not the right one. That's not the right one. I'm looking for, I thought I might have been able to download it, which I did. And I thought I was able to get it on here, which I didn't. So, anyway, I closed it out. What I want to really talk about is where we really have to understand about Bill Nye never got the answer to his question. And his question was, show me, tell me where you can prove something in the future.
Mm-hmm.
You have always talked, we were talking about Genesis, we were talking about the New Testament,
right?
And he said, that proves it. But that doesn't prove it. You're just stating the facts. He said, if it rained when you were sleeping, mm-hmm. and you got up in the morning and you saw the ground outside, you knew it rained. Now, when I was got distracted with this nonsense here and trying to download it here, and I was talking to Father Carl, as he was saying, and I said, why can't it be consistent that both of them are true? And this is what Numbnut said, what's the guy you talk about from the 700 Club?
Oh, Pat Robertson.
Pat Robertson said, well, you know, we found dinosaur bones that were 250 million years old.
Yeah.
He said, so why can't they both be consistent with one another? God created the Big Bang.
I hate that.
Just let things roll as they came out.
I hate to break it to them, but look, used to the only things we had older were rocks and fossils.
That's right.
Right? That were older than 6,000 years recorded history. Right? And we couldn't say, well, you know, you can go back to the, you know, here's an ancient, the pyramid is older than the Bible. Right? You know, you can kind of do that. Now they've actually got structures. They've been doing more and more archaeology over the years. And we have not only just ancient rocks and ancient fossils and other things that say the earth is old, we actually have human recorded history and structures of humanity, cities and stuff, that go back far before that. So it's refuted all over the place, even by humanity itself. So the biblical claim that the earth is, you know, 6,000 years old has been refuted up, down, and sideways. And you can't not say that it is. So,
well,
again, why are we having this debate? That was just like saying, you know, why was the entire world black and white up until we got color TV? You know, or
was it?
Yeah,
I always saw it in color.
That is a fact.
I always saw it in color. Is that why my eyes are crossed? Oh,
yeah,
anyway.
I mean, no, it's just stupid. It was a waste of time, and I just wish that I wouldn't have given him a platform.
Well, one of the things, when I was, another thing I was talking about with Brother Carl is that why couldn't, you know, are they saying that God couldn't create the Big Bang? Because that's what they're saying. It did not.
Right.
Oh, it happened literally. It took 6 days. And on the sixth day, oh, then he said, after he said, oh, yeah, he wants this and this to make man. And he said, oh, I forgot. Let me do the heavens and the earth, too.
Right.
I mean, the heavens.
Right.
He put in the stars. Well, wait a minute. You tell me that God is fallible and he forgets?
Yeah.
Oh, almost slipped my mind. I was just about to go out for a yard of buns. I forgot.
Yeah.
Let me create some stars.
Well, that's like...
so
you know,
that's where he screwed up.
No, but the argument on everything is like that, though. I mean, when you get into biblical studies, again, if you were an infallible, perfect God, why would you make a creation that was so flawed that you repeatedly had to destroy it and start over? See, that again doesn't make sense. Things like that, you know. So, again, that gets into the whole, you know, theological debate. And then my point of it is, just like my friend who used to say, we talked one time, my evangelical friend, about we were talking about the Bush administration that made the news because every day their meetings required all the generals and cabinet members to pray.
Mm.
And it got leaked out to the press where that they all had to pray before each meeting. And they said, well, you know, that's kind of not constitutional. You can't, you know, have one religion. You know, everybody praying, you know, because they were all praying to Jesus Christ, that kind of. So why can you do that, you know? And I, at that point, I even told him, he was like, oh, that's great. That's great. They should do that all. They should be mandatory for every government everywhere. All the, you know, they should do it in every state and everything. This, he's what a great leader. And I went, whoa, 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 whoa. I said, so, but how can you pick and choose a religion? And if you're going to instill religion, I said, so then let's be fair. Let's have, you know, Christianity. How about Sunday? We'll pray to Jesus. Then on Monday, we can do Buddha, and Tuesday, Allah, and Wednesday, you know, and go through all the religions, right?
Right.
He had a connection fit. And that was terroristic, evil, demonic, you know, horrible. How could I even suggest that? He said, those aren't real religions. Those are just nasty. That's just disgusting. And why do you even say that? But that's the point. You know, here you've got, again, 1,000,000,000 different religions. Even Christianity itself has so many different divisions, subsects, and they got every one of them has a different version of the Bible and a different version of truth and a different way they do the ceremonies. And, you know, the endlessness of religion is just one of the beauties of it. Every person has their own religion.
Mm-hmm.
So where do you draw the line? Why do you say it's one? I mean, if we're going to teach creationism, then let's teach Mayan creationism, or,
yes,
or,
you
know, Islamic, or Buddhist, or Jainism, or, you know, Zoroastrianism, or whatever. You know, let's go through the whole gamut, and that would instantly show how wrong they were because the Christians.
Well,
were
hey,
in arms.
If that's what you want to do, I mean, you know, who's there to say no? You can't do that. Who's there to tell us no? I mean, who is there to tell us
if one's valid, they're all valid. So let's have them all. Let's just have a multitude.
A multitude.
Hi, guys.
The gang is coming in.
Visitors.
The visitors coming here. And there's one thing I need to say before we go up the air. Ralph Kiner died.
Huh?
The most home runs of any right-hander until, you know, a...
Ever since my great-grandfather started Community Coffee, we've been obsessed with building.
Okay, not. That's it. Anyway,
doing this much.
Yeah, well, you know, when you're trying to do this in the end of the year.
So, the passing
of Ralph Kiner, one of the original Met announcers.
Me out of nowhere, only when you feel alone. Provide me the reasons and excuses. You tell me you're on your own. You tell me this, tell me we can go somewhere all you and me know. 'Cause I'm there at you, yeah, I'm there at you before you put me on your record. Put me on your list.
Good. That's the end of that.
Oh, my goodness.
I was only trying to do something that I had here that I wanted to say. I don't know why this daggone song is even up here, because that's not the one that I wanted. So I guess we cannot go out, because I didn't think about it until last. But, ladies and gentlemen, Ralph Kiner, as I said, was one of the Mets announcers. It was a fabulous major league ball player. He hit more home runs than any right-hander of his time. Strong right-hander, and he came in the Mets booth before when the Mets first started. He was 91, and, you know, I just want to say, okay, goodbye, Ralph, and I enjoyed listening to you growing up, and... that's about it. So, for us here at The Last Word, I want to say thank you, Ralph Kiner. Anniversary of the Beatles.
50th.
Yeah. So,
give us a little bit of the Jamaican accent for us.
Am I on you? That's not the
and again,
I get no.
It is also February, so please
study
your history, learn your culture.
Study.
Give us a call. and ask us questions about.
About?
It's Black History Month.
Come on, Mike. Black History Month.
We've been talking about MLK all the last 2 weeks on the news and documentaries everywhere. It's been awesome.
And it's also, and let's see what happens.
It's time to go.
Which time to go. All right, everybody. Have a good weekend. I want to see everybody back here next weekend. And if I ever get out of here, a second. Remember, you can't handle the truth.
See you, Colonel.
You
bastard.
Your Honor, I'd like to ask for a recess.
I'd like an answer to the question, Judge.
The court will wait for an answer.
If Lieutenant Kendrick gave an order that Santiago wasn't to be touched, why did he have to be transferred?
That's right, Chris Christie. Why did he have to be transferred? Or why did he have to be thrown under the bus? Good night.